The following is brought to you by the Shining Wizards Network, home to many great podcasts, including Thursday Night Destruction, Inconclusive Breakdown, Neckbreaker, Two and a Half Wrestlers, The Midnight Jury, Turnbuckle Throwbacks, Pro Wrestling 101, Apex Radio, and of course, The Shining Wizards. Available on iTunes, Stitcher, Audio Boom, and at ShiningWizardsNetwork.com.
Listening to a WLW Studios production, broadcasting from the birthplace of our nation and the city of extreme, Philadelphia, hosted by members of the WLW's Galaxy of Stars. You are now entering the After Midnight Podcast.
Once again, travel back to the first decade of this new millennium. It's well past 12, and you have entered the After Midnight Podcast.
I am Adam Batman Beginning, a.k.a. Batmadam Henning.
Nice. It's your pal, Calvin Brody.
Joining you again, Joey Justice Mandela.
And finally, Mike Midnight, Mike Norenganger, the 21st Century Broadcasting Marvel. I'll just throw that in there. And we are here to do our holiday 2014 episode of the After Midnight Podcast here on the Shining Wizards Network, produced, of course, here in WLW Studios, Studio A in Philadelphia.
Looking magical.
How's everybody doing?
Couldn't be better. Thank you, by the way. An advance thank you to the crew here, Mike and Adam. Always plush digs. First and foremost, outstanding equipment, and thank you for the opportunity to be here on the After Midnight Podcast.
You're very welcome.
You're welcome. And it's a little nicer. Because did you ever, I mean, you've been into Studio B.
This is actually the Greenville episode 60, Survivor Series 88 was the first
of the Midnight Jury.
The Midnight Jury was the first episode I had ever taped with you guys in a studio. And now this will be my first Philadelphia Studios, South Street Studios recording. And boy, I mean, just
it's
looking
gonna
at
be. See, he's going to be used to all this posh stuff now.
Yeah, well, this is great.
He wasn't in the trenches like the rest of us.
Taking grenades.
We're setting precedents here. He thinks it's going to get better from here now.
Nope, like, this is it.
This is Joey Mandela's second appearance
on the Midnight Podcast.
On the Midnight Podcast, exactly. So happy to have you, but also happy to have Calvin back. And what better time to have Calvin in studio than to be handling something from DC Comics, a DC Comics creation.
There's no other person I'd rather have here. No offense, Mandela, but like if I wanted to talk about the price and how great the WWE Network was, you were the first person that I would call. But if it's about comics, even more than myself, Adam, or yourself, I think we can all agree that Cal's would know the most.
Thank you for having me, gentlemen. It's a pleasure to be back here.
By the way, I don't want to.
I slowed down like I was going to say something
it's
else.
It's going to be a pleasure.
I decided to be boring instead.
There is plenty of. The whole episode will be about Batman Begins. I just want to make a side note that I do sympathize with Joey Mandela. I feel like sometimes I feel like I'm ganging up on Joey Mandela as the WWE guy.
It feels like
that
to me.
Well, no, but I've
kind of should.
I have been in that position throughout most of my wrestling fandom. A with WCW, I got basically ganged up on because I was the lone WCW guy.
Hey, well, that's one thing you and I have in common. So hey, we should be.
Yeah, but you
really,
guys didn't meet until WCW was over. So you guys didn't have each other.
Oh,
to
WCW has never really ended for me.
It's never over.
I mean, I say I live in the now, but when it comes to WCW, it may as well be 1998.
Yeah, same here. We're brothers in that regard. But I fight the good fight for TNA, so I understand where you're coming from. But I will maintain that TNA, like I said on the last episode that you appeared on, Mr. Mandela, that TNA needs the help a little bit more than WWE. And if we don't give WWE signals that they're doing something wrong, things aren't going to get better. But back onto the topic at hand, which is Batman Begins.
The beginning of the rebooted series, and this was based off of what? Come on, Cal.
I think this was based off of, year one, right?
I think, I mean, I'm just saying it was definitely based off of some point in the comics, in the comic series. Well, I feel like I should even know this.
I'm not positive what it is, but I'm pretty sure it's year one.
Okay, so, what is it, Christopher Nolan directing?
Yes.
And then you have Christian Bale as your new Batman, Joey Potter playing, what was her character name?
That was Rachel Dawes, who actually, that is a throwback to, like, the older comics. She was back in the older comics, like, girls couldn't do stuff.
Yeah, of course not.
Was she like a secretary?
She'd be like cook.
Stewardess, secretary. Cook. No, she was,
A stewardess?
I think she was just one of Bruce Wayne's, you know, girlfriends for those two issues, you know? It wasn't really until, like, Batgirl that I think they started letting girls do stuff in the Bat universe.
Isn't it strange to think that, It's already been 9, almost 10 years since this movie came out.
It really is crazy, and it's funny because it draws parallels to actually the Star Wars.
What
trailer.
Year are we looking at for? Because I didn't write 05. It for some
reason. This was 2005.
Okay.
And
I love 2005.
It's funny because, like I said, it draws parallels because the Star Wars trailer just came out, and so like I'm trying to not follow any of that stuff, and it was the same thing with Batman. Like, when I heard they were making a new Batman movie, I didn't want to know any spoilers.
Are you talking about this one or the new one?
This one.
Okay.
Begins. I didn't want to go in with any sort of preconceived anything, you know? And so, yeah, just I loved
yeah, because you know what would piss me off? If, like, I would have watched this trailer for this Batman Begins and something stupid would have happened.
Yeah.
Like, fucking maybe let's just say somebody on the north side of the wall in Game of Thrones pulls out a tri-saber. That would have fucking pissed me off. I would have been so mad at how stupid that is. But you know that would never happen. Like, you know, this Batman Begins.
Exhibit A as to why Calvin did not watch the trailers leading up to Batman Begins. I think you should not watch any more trailer, and I think I shouldn't either.
Look, I'm going to go see the movie regardless. They got my money. They have my money either opening night or the opening weekend, so they don't need to worry about it. So I have every right to bash the shit out of the things I don't like about it and the things that I don't agree with.
Well,
and by the way, I don't want you guys to think I'm just being, oh, I hate that saber. Go back like a week ago, whatever, and look on my Facebook page, facebook.com/midnightgonger, and I explain the exact reason why that saber just doesn't make sense. But anyway, like I said to you guys off the air, they'll probably come up with some reason that, like, through the Force, he can mentally turn them off when he wants to.
I'll make this very quick, but I was under the impression that this new Star Wars the new venture into Star Wars, making new Star Wars movies, was going to be much less CGI. And I saw a little bit more CGI than I was expecting in the trailer.
It's a teaser trailer. I mean, they may have used more practical effects, but just in the bits that we saw.
Hopefully, I really do. I'll keep positive regarding that.
And us, the members here of the WLW Galaxy of Stars, we will be picking a place. Hopefully, I would like to get a few of us together to go see the Star Wars for the first time.
I'd love to do that.
And we'll announce it, and we'll go representing our After Midnight podcast.
I was actually going to ask Calvin
or the Midnight podcasts.
I was going to actually ask specifically Calvin. You are going to go see Episode 7, yes?
Oh yeah, no, I'm definitely going to see it.
Of course, he's a glutton for punishment, just like all Star Wars or WWE fans. We were talking about this earlier.
Aside from the stupid fucking soccer ball droid and the dopey tri-saber,
the X-wings going across the ice or the water looked fucking cool as hell.
The majority of everything that I saw, I didn't mind. I actually quite liked the trailer, to be honest with you.
The only thing I say, here's my final say, and then you can give your final say real quick. We'll get right into Batman Begins. My final say on that is that I think because it's a teaser trailer, we all know Luke and Han and everybody are coming back. So I would have at least liked to see at the very end a quick shot of like Luke with the beard and the saber getting ignited and him just say one thing.
That's what I thought it was going to be.
One thing, because didn't the preview for the Sith, for Revenge of the Sith, didn't at the very end they show Vader real quick or something, and he said something?
You just get the Yes Master line. That's
exactly. Boom. That's all you need. But they didn't give me that.
All you need is an appearance in the trailer for a split second of any of the old characters.
Yeah, it didn't have to be all of them. It just had to be one of them.
Exactly,
or Han with his blaster saying, like, you know, this is about to be
Star
fun.
Yeah, exactly.
Come on, Chewie.
Yeah.
The only thing, question I have.
We're in it again, Chewie.
I got a bad feeling about
this. Did they show Chewie real quick or no?
No, I don't think so. Okay.
Yeah. They didn't show anything old.
That's
bullshit. There were people on the internet that thought the X-Wing pilot was Wedge after he said that he wasn't going to come back for it. And it's actually not Wedge.
It's not Wedge.
It's funny. my cousin actually, my brother figured out who it actually was. And he's a 34-year-old actor named Oscar Isaac or something like that. My cousin was like, I'm sure he's very happy to be mistaken for 67-year-old fucking Dennis Lawson.
Good point. How is that little soccer droid's head attached to that bottom part?
I don't want to think about it. It annoys me because it seems so kiddie.
I agree.
Sure
no, I'm not defending the soccer
whatever,
droid.
But
no, but I'm not defending the soccer droid. But what about
thoughts.
Hello? But what about the fucking thing? Even in the original saga, that hovers in midair and like shoots at Luke. His training.
The training remote.
There you go. So that hovers. So why can't something else hover? I don't understand.
Good point.
Maybe it has some sort of magnet
long time ago when a galaxy far.
Yeah, and maybe
far
it has
away.
Some sort
All
of
right.
magnet that attaches it to the soccer ball, but the brain of the machine is in this little thing that hovers above it.
I'm going to say it's two almost like two balls on top of one another that roll together. You know what I mean?
No, I think they show there is a
space between it.
Yeah. All right, well, let's get into this.
Because like it's too kiddy. It's too cutesy.
We're in the new millennium, the first decade of the new millennium, 2000 to 2010, our specialty here on the After Midnight podcast. And on our last episode, our inaugural episode, we did wrestling. We did WWE versus ECW, the TV special. So if you want some wrestling from the new millennium, go to our last episode. We also hit pop culture in that one and did Mean Girls. And that one was really fun to do and, like, got a lot of attention because it's Mean Girls. Everyone fucking knows that movie. Well, let's do another movie that everybody knows. We're in 2005. It's Batman Begins. And let's get into this movie.
You said, by the way, preconceived notions, I think, is what got the tangent started off on the Star Wars to begin with. I'll tell you, I had a preconceived notion going into Batman Begins, seeing the trailer, and that was seeing Christian Bale being selected as the... Because, I hadn't been following it, but once I saw the trailer and it was confirmed, I mean... This is the guy that I had rented, and keep in mind, this is back when Blockbuster was still taking my money. I had rented American Psycho, I'd say at least 10 times. I mean, amazing. I couldn't wait to see this movie, and I think they couldn't have picked a better Batman.
I had no problem when he was cast. I wasn't like for or against it like I am with Affleck, because I just don't like Affleck as a person. He's such a douche.
Christian Bale was basically an unknown to me, so... I don't know. He looked the part. His Bruce Wayne is terrific.
Yeah, I like his. I have no problem with his Bruce Wayne.
It's just when
he gets a little crazy with the Batman voice.
Well, I like it. That's and I mentioned this or I make note of this. It's before it gets obnoxious, and so his bat voice in this is actually pretty awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
Christian Bale just as a person doesn't seem human enough to me. Somebody like Michael Keaton seems like somebody I could know and relate to. Christian Bale just seems very, as a human being, very pompous. And I think it comes.
That's the thing. That was what we mentioned when we were talking about Batman
Keaton.
Keaton is very Keaton
goofy.
Is very relatable. He's very workaday. He's very blue collar. But the thing is, Bruce Wayne is not.
Bruce Wayne is
not supposed to be.
Bruce Wayne is a millionaire playboy.
We're all going to have our own interpretations of what we think Bruce Wayne should be. And
I'm
yes,
going by the comic.
But Bruce Wayne should not be like
did he look like Michael Keaton?
I think what Adam is trying to say
He looked a lot more like Val Kilmer and Christian Bale than he did Michael Keaton.
Adam, correct me if I'm wrong. Are you trying to tell our listeners that Bruce Wayne should be more of a Clark Kent? Because in my opinion, when you take a look at Keaton, he appears to be a dweeb. You know?
No. I'm not saying Keaton is a perfect Batman or Bruce Wayne. I'm saying that even if you have the look of a millionaire playboy, in my opinion, Bruce Wayne is still somebody that is relatable and is only putting on the appearance of somebody that is out of touch, playboy, millionaire, untouchable guy. Behind closed doors to Alfred or to all the girls that know who he really is, he's more of a normal person, and he's a more relatable and likable person.
Okay, that's being okay with when you're talking about the way Keaton maybe acts. I'm talking about the way Keaton looks.
Well, I'm talking about the acting and mostly.
I was talking about the acting. I think when he goes in,
I'm going by looks. I don't think Keaton has the looks to play Bruce Wayne. That's all I'm saying.
I agree with that too, but I'm specifically addressing Adam when he says, like, for instance, when he goes into the Joker's when the Joker and Keaton are both in.
I laughed hysterically at that. When he goes
Vicky
nuts.
Vale's apartment, yeah. And he
gets nuts.
Let's get nuts. When does that?
Like, to me, that's
like,
lame.
It's unbelievable. Exactly. I mean, like, this guy is not the kind of guy. I think it's almost the opposite. In real life, Bruce Wayne is like this chumpy guy. And then behind closed doors, when he's hanging out with Vicky Vale, he's trying to be like almost like he's billionaire playboy, almost like he's got so much swag that he doesn't even need the billionaire playboy persona because he's so swag. But it's not even believable. I don't know. I'm not making.
Well, regardless of as much as we all don't want to start this, we're going to start this right now. So the first scene of the movie is Bruce and Rachel as kids. They find the Bat Cave. You want to talk about it? Anybody have anything on that opening scene? It's just basically a flashback scene.
Arrowhead. They find the Arrowhead.
Well, yeah, and he falls down the well. He ends up falling down the well into the Batcave.
He says, finders keepers.
My question is that when Bruce wakes up, he wakes up in some sort of like Asian hospital.
He's in the prison.
That's a prison?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
See, I never really got that.
No, because then...
You remember he was fighting with all the prisoners?
I thought it was more of like a homeless, like,
no,
shelter.
Wait, what the fuck is this?
This was where Mike Norenganger grew up in real life, ladies and gentlemen. For you listeners who came from what he would call the other side of the tracks.
Wait a minute.
I mean, this guy's clearly...
Talk about out of touch.
He's clearly in a work camp or a concentration camp of some kind, and he's getting into a fight in the breakfast line with some big guy over, you know... protection, and that's what they say at the end. He ended up needing protection, and he's like, "Oh, from who? From them?" And that's the guards trying to break up a fight that, you know, he basically.
The big guy says "I'm the devil,"
yeah.
And he goes, "You're not the devil. You're practice."
Yeah,
I like that line.
It's very.
I have no problem with him.
Prison because.
Well, I thought he was just fighting homeless shelter people.
Well, no, because that would make Batman an asshole. Because there's just homeless shelter people.
Hell yeah, but this guy messed with him.
There's armed guards breaking them up, telling them they need to protect him.
But I just figured in some weird third world country, that's what they do.
Take him to solitaire. Why? For protection. I don't need protection. Not for you, for them.
Yeah, and then it shows a pile of like 12 guys that he just laid out.
But it shows a little bit later when he's talking to fucking Liam Neeson how he gets busted stealing the Wayne Enterprises stuff in China. And so that's what leads him to being in the fucking prison camp.
Yeah.
We're jumping ahead.
A couple of questions I have about this opening scene. After everything he experienced, including his parents' death, he still is having nightmares about a run-in with bats as a child. I think that's kind of laughable. A prisoner in this Asian country is well-read enough to have learned English just to talk shit to Bruce Wayne. and if Bruce Wayne is really trying to understand the criminal mind, wouldn't an American prison be more indicative of the Gotham criminal mind than an Asian prison? I actually kind of countered my own point there, though, because he does need to sort of be under...
Well, you really pulled that whole first scene apart. That's awesome.
Anonymous.
I have no problem
Bruce
with that.
Wayne
that's exactly it.
In a regular prison
he had to go that far away to be...
Even if he wanted to be, like, they just wouldn't...
That was the answer to my own question. Exactly.
Wayne Enterprises on them.
After he gets pulled off of, like, literally fighting all these prisoners...
Seven of them.
They're protecting them, not him. He gets thrown in the cell with Ra's al Ghul, who's playing not Ra's al Ghul. He's playing
Dakar.
Is that Dakar?
Yeah. And he even says it was like
What the fuck is going on here?
Ra's al Ghul. We don't know that he's
Ra's al Ghul.
We know that he's Dakar.
You're telling me that Asian guy, the whole movie wasn't Ra's al Ghul?
No. Come on. How are you missing? Did you watch the movie?
Oh my goodness.
No, I was wondering where Ra's al Ghul was at the end of the movie.
He says he's Ra's al Ghul.
I thought he was fucking around.
No, Liam Neeson is Ra's al Ghul guy.
And by the way, we have to bring this up, and I know they've been brought up in memes and everything, but how cool is it that this dude trained Batman and Obi-Wan Kenobi?
Right.
Like, are you kidding me?
So, he always says when he first gets put into the cell, he says, "Oh yeah, I saw how you took down six guys," and he's like,
Oh, it was more like seven. No, I saw six. So, I mean, like...
No, that's not even what he says. He says, so you're... I can offer you purpose unless you want, unless you decide to just go to prisons to fight your way through the criminal population one by one.
Well, Liam Neeson is trying to...
More like seven.
Liam Neeson's, he's basically trying to get Bruce Wayne to join the League of Shadows.
He said, you're lost, you're offering you a path, you know, you have a hatred of evil. If you want true justice, you know, you're going to have to fucking join the League.
And the way to do... Oh, go ahead.
In my distorted mindset, thinking that Raj... I mean, I don't...
Are you
kidding me? So who is that Asian guy?
The Asian guy is the cover. It's the jabroni.
It's like the decoy.
Yeah.
But in
your Padme's decoy.
Let me ask you something. Are you talking about the Asian guy at the beginning who's old, who comes back at the end, and also he says, oh, I want you to introduce you to this man. His name is...
Tell me if I'm saying this right.
Is it Ra's al Ghul?
I don't think so. No, I think it's an
They're
Asian...
They're both Asian
It's an
decoys.
Asian figurehead
yeah,
of, like,
the
League of Shadows.
It's always been... Ra's al Ghul has always been Liam Neeson.
All right, fair enough. I guess I understand that now. But I feel like I'm going to say Ra's al Ghul. I don't give a shit if that's
wrong.
No,
well, that's what we go for right now. No, Liam Neeson.
No.
Call him Dakar if
I'm
you
saying
want
you guys are like Ra's al Ghul, I guess the official...
No, his name is Dakar. Dakar.
No. My point is, how do you guys pronounce Ra's al Ghul?
Fuck it. Oh, who cares about the pronunciation?
Well, they pronounce it Ra's al Ghul in this movie, but I think in the animated series it was Ra's al Ghul.
Okay, that's what I'm saying.
Go with the Asian.
I'm gonna go with the way I usually say it. So as long as you guys understand me,
tell me if I'm saying this right.
Now, Ra's al Ghul is supposed to look something like somewhere between the Asian guy and the guy that plays Ra's al Ghul in this movie. I feel like he's supposed to look a little bit more Asian than who plays him in this movie?
Liam Neeson.
Yeah, okay, he's supposed to look a little bit more Asian than that, right?
I don't...
A little bit more...
In the comics?
Yeah.
In the comics,
I think he looked a little bit more Asian.
Just a tad. But regardless, I would say that Liam Neeson looks more like the comic Ra's al Ghul than the guy that I thought Ra's al Ghul was until now.
Yeah.
So I always thought that was weird that he was so Asian.
The guy you thought was Ra's al Ghul, who plays Ra's al Ghul in the beginning of the movie, looks more like the Mandarin. Like the old Mandarin from, like, the Iron Man comics.
Okay. Now...
But yeah, that's Ken Watanabe from The Last Samurai and Inception.
Gotcha.
Very good actor.
Okay, proceed.
So the way to get into the League of Shadows, or at least be considered for initiation into training for the League of Shadows, Liam Neeson tells him, we'll make it simple, I'll call him Qui-Gon Jinn. Qui-Gon Jinn, he tells him you have to get
instead of Liam Neeson.
Well, six names.
You're
going to
make this easy on everybody.
We'll call him something
so anyway, so Qui-Gon Jinn tells him you need to go get the blue flower from the bottom of the slopes.
No, the east slope.
Okay, the east slopes, whatever.
Bottom of the east slope.
And so
bring
you
to
have to bring it to the top of the mountain, and you'll find what you're looking for. And so he does it. He gets out of prison and goes to do this. And I immediately wrote, as he was traveling up this mountain, that it would really suck to live on this mountain.
Yeah.
Or to live on any mountain,
The guy, and the guy even says to him, go back. There's that little Asian guy that tells him to go back. And it's like, guy, I'm already... fucking 75% of the way up Mount Everest. I'm not going to go back now.
Yeah, but you know what? Let's be honest here. Does anybody else think that they made this just literally? Like, okay, so literally, Qui-Gon Jinn's standing there, and he's like, "You to be initiated, you must go find this rare blue flower."
You're like having a tattoo. What are you doing?
No, but I'm just explaining how intense he made it seem. Like, you must go find this rare blue flower that grows on the east slope.
They're importing thousands of pounds.
On the east slopes
of
this mountain,
right?
Yeah, could go all the way up the top of the mountain and meet us at this temple. And you think this is going to be this adventure. And then it happens in like 2 minutes.
Yeah.
He's just like, oh, here's the flower. And I'm up.
You see how
tough
it is.
Oh, come on. It wasn't.
No.
It seemed like I could have done it like yesterday. No, I was like, oh, yesterday I grabbed the blue flower and went up to the temple.
It was a little bit weird because they were trying to portray, they were supposedly portraying a passage of many, many days. But it literally, the montage made it seem like it was 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Because he has different clothing on from little clip to clip.
Exactly. Different coat, and then he has a fucking head wrap, and then this. But I like, he's a fucking Liam Neeson's like, all right, you're going to get released tomorrow, and blah, 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 do all this bullshit. And they apparently just toss him from like a slow-moving truck. Like, because by the time he stands up after they throw him into the road, the truck's already, like, halfway down the road.
Yeah, well, like, the thing is that, like, I guess being released from prison in this country, Malaysia, where are we? Well, being released from prison is you're being thrown from a speeding car.
No, I think Ra's al Ghul paid them a hefty amount of money to put him,
throw him off on the street.
Put him right there, yeah.
Well, he was probably, like, set him free here.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh, okay, and then just fucking throw him out into the road, you know?
Yep.
And then when they get there, he says...
Right away, just gets to the temple, boom.
So he gets to the temple, he gives them the blue flower, he's obviously dead on his feet.
Joey, just real quick, I just think on his trek up the mountain, if they showed even one time him sleeping, it would have shown that it happened over many days.
I mean, it happened so fast. And, like, I also want to bring up that I'm glad that the blue flower wasn't just a, like, something to prove that you can hold something delicate, I guess, up this trek up this mountain, that later on it came in play.
Yeah, like, it actually served a purpose.
Yeah, okay. But, yeah. So, anyway, we go into the temple, and he, like, just, like, walks in, and he just begins a training pretty much immediately.
He hands him the blue flower. And then he shows it to the fake
Ra's al Ghul.
Yeah, to decoy. Yeah, you go. That's the first appearance of fake Ra's al Ghul. Then when he first gets there, he hands over the flower, and they ask him, you know, why are you here? And he says, I want to put the fear into those who use it to prey on others. And then Liam Neeson tells him, you must master your own fears first. Bam! Puts a quick ass whooping on him, and. You know?
I like the "this is not a dance" line.
Yeah.
Because they're just like, not that Bruce Wayne can't fight.
He calls out every style that he does.
Yeah.
And he's like, boom, like, no problem, just countering everything.
Monkey style.
So we go to a flashback scene at this point where I guess this is a flashback to after he fell down the well, excuse me, in the earlier flashback scene with younger Rachel. Whatever her last name
was. The last thing he saw was bats swarming above his head, and now his dad's lowering down spelunker style.
Now, his dad gets him out. Then he brings him what seems to be in his first ever time showing Bruce Gotham City. It seemed to me like this was the first. He was like pointing out things. Yeah. I was like, how has this kid not seen this yet?
No, you're exactly right.
He's like 10 years old.
I also ask. Is it
really that hard to believe that maybe Bruce Wayne was a sheltered rich boy?
No, it's not hard to believe. Well, no, but it's not hard to believe that maybe he didn't.
No, I think it's hard to believe.
I think
it's very hard to believe that until now.
It depends what your definition of sheltered is. He didn't go to preschool with kids from Gotham, but he certainly went on treks throughout the city. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was on that train before. Had to be.
Like, but I don't think maybe he didn't know the original purpose and the history behind the train.
I don't know. I thought it was confusing. He also acted like it was his first time ever in Gotham's actual city.
Yeah, he does. And he also, we're led to believe that young Bruce didn't know where his dad worked until this train ride. Because he's like, Dad, is that where you work?
Yeah.
And he's like, yes.
You've never seen Wayne Tower?
Yeah, it's preposterous.
That's unbelievable.
Also, we've met Alfred, and we've mentioned...
Like, on Bring Your Kid to Work Day, like, at least once a year, he never brings his kid into the office to be like, hey, this is my son.
Well, maybe they don't...
Like, I feel like any CEO of any company would be bringing his, let's say, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8-year-old kid into the office at least one day a year.
No, but you don't even
have to... One day!
You don't even have to do that. If Bruce, little Bruce, has ever been in the city...
Or around the city.
He's seen that building that his dad owns. Like, it's stupid, and there's no way to explain it away.
So then...
He might be explaining the trade. Maybe he doesn't usually take the train. Maybe Alfred drives him.
No, but he also isn't familiar with this big building that the trains
big,
go
huge,
to.
But anyway.
Wait, real quick. We have been introduced to Alfred. We mentioned when we watched Batman 89 how Alfred is always portrayed as significantly younger, maybe in his 40s, early 50s in the comic, bald and with brown hair and a mustache. For some reason, this movie also casts Alfred unlike the comics. They cast a guy that looks more similar to the Batman 89 canon.
In none of them I ever had a problem. I think they always did great.
Yeah, I actually think that they made an improvement to the Batman franchise by doing this Alfred.
I actually, because of Batman 89, I dislike that this Alfred seemed younger.
Let's just call it
Alfred 89.
Let's call it like it is. This Alfred kicks ass compared to the old Alfred.
No, I
was just going to disagree with that.
I like original canon Alfred the best.
Oh, come on.
Original canon Alfred 4.
I don't hate.
I don't think a smuggy... I think, okay, I think it's typecast at the time. He's working within the confines of the system. He's smug and he's weak.
He's not
this
smug.
This guy is strong and quick-witted. I think that's the big difference. I think this guy is
Alfred saves Bruce a bunch of times.
But saves him is one thing. But does this guy have the ability? I'm jumping ahead here to the log scene. But this guy has the ability to motivate him from within, and that seems to be like
I know. But
so did the other
there's
Bruce.
There's a connection with this Alfred that doesn't exist in previous franchises.
It has more to do with the.
You said the other Bruce.
No, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying that's how Alfred had with the other Bruce, with the other Alfred and the other Bruces. I still feel like he could motivate him from inside by his words of wisdom.
The tone of this movie is completely different than the Batman 89 through 94 canon or 90 whatever. And so the dialogue is all different. But I just don't like how this new Alfred is like a psychologist. And it's a little bit too mushy. For me, I just like the old Alfred better. I like the look of the old Alfred as well.
You like a business association. I think this is more of a
no. That's not. That's not true.
No. The Alfred from the 89 series is more family than.
I disagree.
Unbelievable. No.
Yeah. No.
No.
Unbelievable.
No. Unbelievable. No. His fucking niece shows up out of the blue, and Bruce is like, "Your family. You're living in my house now." Like, hello. And it wasn't Bruce's family. It was Alfred's family.
I don't know what I can't. It's hard to
come on.
It's hard to
show some respect to Batman and Robin.
I think that the fight, but you'll see, and especially as the franchise develops, the fights that they have, the deepness of their what
right,
you could define as
on.
Love. You know,
my point. Different.
I don't hate the new Alfred.
So they bring. Oh no, I don't hate the new Alfred either. I'm not saying I do. I just
step
think
up,
that,
and you guys
no,
don't think he's
no,
a step up.
I do not. Anyway. So he brings Bruce into the city. Him and his Mr. and Mrs. Wayne bring Bruce into the city. Now they know he has a paralyzing fear of bats, and then they bring him to a play about bats. Like, what the fuck is that about?
I just wanted to mention that.
Yeah, bad anxiety.
Yeah, they know that. He fears bats.
The train.
Especially since, like, the day before, he fell down a cave and was attacked by a swarm of bats.
Just before that scene, I think he wakes up. The little young Bruce wakes up, and his dad's like, "Nightmare about the bats again."
Yeah. And then he's like, "Want to go to the play about the spooky bats?
We're going to go to play about the not bats."
I just wanted to mention that the train that they were on for something for a movie that takes place years gone by, that train is way too futuristic, unrealistic. I just wanted to mention that. But I guess they do have. I guess this has to be an alternate universe.
First of all, we have the monorail in Disney World since the late 1970s.
It doesn't look like that,
and
though.
I know, but it's equally as shilly designed. Instead of concrete slabs,
okay,
it's just these steel girders Gordon's able to destroy it with like two, like one well placed missile is able
but
to.
Listen,
take down
all
the
I'm
whole
saying
structure.
Is that it just seems a little bit out of this universe and in a whole different universe with due to some of the technology that we see.
I do agree that Gotham look. I think Gotham should always look a little less future.
Well, I mean,
Metropolis should look.
Yeah, very
more,
I mean,
exactly.
It looked a little. Future.
It had a little bit too futuristic.
How big
image.
An asshole do you have to be? Like, your city's in the middle
of a big
depression or recession or whatever, and you, your wife, and your son are dressed up in your penguin suits and your beautiful dresses.
Yeah, they're
pearl.
Really asking for it.
And you're taking the train because you're a regular person.
Yeah.
It's like when Jay-Z does it. Stop it. Stop it.
It is really
take the Rolls Royce. You're rich. It's okay. You're rich.
It is really corny.
What I never understood is in either the original or in this one, why is it this major opera house like is immediately next to like the slum? Like, could they
that's true.
couldn't they pick this the theater? Like,
there's got to be a little district that's nice.
Couldn't there be like a theater with all the other theaters in the theater district? Or is this just are we just led to believe that? And if there is the slum, why is it?
Well, hold on, wait. Before
every single
we get
time
outside,
his dad always takes him out the door. That's right next to the slum. They can't go where the taxi stand is.
No, but hold on. We're not out the door yet. Because I still have one other question while we're in the play. When Bruce gets, of course, scared of the bat play because he's terrified of bats, Why did the father have to lie to the mother about the reasoning for the play? Why didn't he just go, remember before the play when we were like, hey, maybe we shouldn't take him to this terrifying bat play?
And you were like, no,
we're not.
My mother said that you
were scared of the bats, just like we said.
I think that's his father trying to cover for him, trying to make him feel like a man, but they all know
that he's scared of bats. So why even put him in this predicament?
It's his mother.
He's about to turn 13 or 14. He's about to try to, you know, he's trying to.
But it's the same thing as like, I want to make him feel like a man and whatever. But then bring him to the zoo, bring him outside like the bat caves, him into the room and closing the door behind you.
You know what it is? He's trying not to have his kid grow up to be one of those guys that's constantly insecure about everything. And it's
all right. I get it, but I'm just saying that there's this whole idea of going to a play that involves bats makes no sense. So now we get outside to the slums.
Real quick.
That are outside as a kid, fancy opera house.
As a kid, I would have absolutely despised going to an opera, regardless of the theme of that opera. Just so fucking boring.
It looked cool, but it's just noise. It's just high-pitched noise carrying on.
This and ballet.
It's what rich people... It's to give back to the community. It's the arts. It's what they would be doing.
I don't give a shit what it's for. I
could be a trillionaire right now.
As a kid and as an adult, I don't want to ever go to something like this.
Well, I'm surprised. Do you have any Italian in your blood, Mr. Hennig?
Yo, go screw yourselves, Italians.
Whoa.
All right.
I feel like this is now a Roddy Piper interview in Madison Square Garden. I'm expecting Bruno Sammartino to knock the walls down here in WLW Studios.
No, I am 37.5% Italian. Though
what?
Is that even possible?
Of
course. It is. Half of 75%.
Fuck yourself.
Yeah, if one of your parents is 75% anything, you become 37.5% something.
What do you have to say about this?
The math works out.
Okay, yep. Thank you.
Seems to work out.
All I want to say...
No, but I agree with you. Dude, this and ballet, I don't care how much money I had, I wouldn't... Maybe I'd give money to it.
Yeah, I would just donate to it.
Yeah, exactly.
Or if a spouse or a family member was in it, you have to go see it.
Okay, yes. Okay, if someone was in it that I personally knew, I'd maybe go see it.
Support them.
But I would give the money no matter what because I understand there's people who like that shit.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't go.
Correct.
Not at all. Exactly. Boring... Like, literally, it would be, like, worse than work.
Exactly. And now, I don't mean screw Italians. I just mean that just because I'm Italian does not mean I need to like anything, including soccer, opera, or whatever. So that's all I'm going to say about that. And then secondly, I just thought that they maybe – I believe that young Bruce Wayne was younger in the comics when his parents died. I may be wrong on that. Either way, I would amend the comic.
Which one of you guys was asking you would opt to do it without that scene?
No. Let me finish that point. That I don't buy, and I think it's kind of pathetic, that a 11 to however old Bruce...
10, 11.
10, 11, 12. Yeah. That old of a kid is so scared of bats. I just think it's stupid to me.
Everyone has phobias, man.
It was also coupled with the fall. I mean, it was just an overall traumatic experience that was capped off by the bats.
No, and again, I get it. He just looks sort of pathetic, being scared of these obvious humans and very fake looking.
Being human, brother.
Very fake looking bat suits. I just think it.
Listen, I see how a child can have a fear of bats. There are a lot of kids who have fears of things. Even into adulthood.
I
look at Sydney. She has a fear of pineapples.
Okay, listen.
That's weird. We're dealing with legitimate fear of pineapples, not like I don't like pineapples. No, fear. He doesn't want them. If she sees them and gets caught off guard by them, she freaks out.
Wow,
okay. It's really weird. That's fine. I just would have not had a problem with it if it were a 5 or 6 year old. I just don't like Batman being so pathetic. At 11, 12,
well, yeah,
or 13.
You want Michael Keaton to come out and, you want to get nuts?
Listen, he is the most pathetic, like, acting
he's
Bruce
such
Wayne.
A sniveling
all right,
little
let me move
this
on.
Is supposed
bitch.
To reset so, okay. the Batman franchise, though.
So we move. So once again, like Joey Mandela was talking about earlier, we go out into the, like, for some reason, his dad doesn't just bring him out the normal entrance. He brings him out the side ghetto entrance of the opera house into an alleyway, and where Jack Napier shows up to shoot his parents.
It's Joe Chill.
I really thought
I was
this
waiting
was,
for somebody to this, make, to catch the Jack
were,
Napier.
You were fix it yourself.
I know. Nope. I was waiting.
I thought the Napier. This is the one of the. By the way, just so you know, even compared to the original Batman, I think this movie is stands up. But this is one of those scenes that I think was just better than the original. Let's go, Jack.
I don't know.
It was so scary in the original.
No, I like this one
like,
better.
Whoever, which one of you guys said earlier on, like in the beginning of this interview, one of you guys said.
This interview. This broadcast, who's interviewing
the,
who right
at
now?
At the beginning of this broadcast, one of you guys said, oh, how is it he could still have nightmares of being,
me.
Parents being shot?
Me. No, not nightmares of his parents being shot.
Henning is ruthless
at,
this
at,
after midnight
at
episode.
30,
get over it.
At 30.
At 30 plus years old that he's still waking up scared of
guy.
Bats. It's just stupid.
No.
Okay, you watch your parents shot in front of your face.
No. He said the bats.
No, I didn't
he's
say that.
He's waking up about the, yeah. No, I, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay,
listen.
The shooting is incredibly traumatic.
Well, obviously. No, he's talking about how. He was how at his age he was still dreaming about that time he fell down the well and then the bats came out.
Yeah, not his parents' death, and he was in the Asian prison.
His parents' death would have made way
Are
more
you trying
sense.
To say that you're
exactly.
You're not being ruthless.
What?
I fucking hate Italians. I hate
listen,
black people. I hate Spanish people.
That,
get
listen.
Back
you
over
heard?
The border. All
if,
episode, man. I feel like,
I feel like those words have come out of Mike's mouth at least 15 times in the history of this show.
I think what sums up the opinion I'm trying to get across here is, do you, anyone remember Bruce's father's last words to him?
In this movie?
In this movie, in Batman Begins.
He says something like,
get over the bats.
Get over the bats.
Don't be afraid.
Yes, he says, don't be afraid. And I think there's...
And yet he spends the rest of his life
being afraid of bats.
I think that's where... Exactly. That's where, Adam, I think you have a right to... That's where you, I think, have a leg to stand on. And that ultimately is why I think this scene should have been more like the old scene that was a lot scarier. This scene is like him not really being afraid and... The actor and the kid in general who plays him just looks like he's forcing the tears. I don't know.
Can we go? Okay, so
after his parents
sorry,
are shot in front of his face.
Regarding the of the parents. I just think it's...
I think they had it coming. I think they deserved it. Fuck them.
They were probably Italian.
Just so you guys aren't caught off guard, I feel like maybe I took the most critical... a perspective with this movie. Not purposely. I didn't mean to be a wrench in anybody's...
No, man, it's fine.
Kink in it, whatever. I don't know what I'm trying to say.
So anyway, I want to get to Commissioner Gordon.
No, both parents die way too quickly, I thought.
They were shot with a gun.
At point blank range.
Yeah,
not in the head.
Like a foot away.
Not in the head. Literally shot and then death. No, there's...
Well, depending on where they got shot, he could have shot them in the heart.
I think there was some gurgling.
It just didn't.
Well, the mom died. He actually missed when he shot at the mom. She just died of fright.
death. I've seen death scenes done much more realistically. I thought it was a little unrealistic.
Yeah, in the original movie, you know.
I didn't have any problem. I actually didn't have any problem with that death scene. Bruce doesn't run for help or make a sound.
Just kind of chills.
Yeah.
He's frozen. You've never had a dream where you're frozen? Oh, my God.
They cut the scene there.
He's traumatized.
And let's go, Jack. They cut back into him at the police station, and with this, what's going to be Commissioner Gordon, Police Officer Gordon.
Sergeant Gordon.
Yes, comes up to him, and...
Great advertisement for Just for Men, by the way.
I feel like he kind of gives him a good little pep talk. I thought that was kind of cool, and that signals as to why later in life he trusts this Gordon guy, because he saw how truthful he was being towards him. But other cop comes up and goes, good news, son. We got him. I wrote, great.
Yeah.
I just watched my parents get shot.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the least of my worries right now, you
guy.
Asshole.
I found Commissioner Gordon's initial words to Bruce very, very unreassuring. He just kept going, it's okay. it's okay.
But he was kind of
is
like,
it, okay?
It was almost genuine the way he was delivering it
no,
to
the
a little
delivery
boy
was,
he,
had, was
he
genuine,
probably
yeah.
never met, but he knew who he was. You cut back to real time, and Qui-Gon Jinn asks him if he still blames himself. He's trying to teach him basically invisibility and agility and theatrics.
Invisibility.
What ninjas in the League of Shadows do to keep themselves, yes, invisible. And Qui-Gon is using basically Bruce's anger against him. And basically, Bruce thinks he has him beat at one point, but Qui-Gon goes, nope, they're standing on ice, and goes, you've basically, what did he say? You've compromised
you,
your...
Yeah, you gave up sure footing for a killing strike or something like that.
And basically taps the ice, and Bruce falls in.
That whole scene... First, I like that the League of Shadows isn't evil, because their whole... Just like the Sith in Star Wars.
I don't understand. Maybe they are...
Yeah, Calvin, like, I think you have. I think yeah. you're 100% wrong there.
Well, no,
but continue.
Well, the intentions are wrong, but what they're trying to do is they're trying to bring order from what they perceive as chaos. Mankind is too stupid and too fearful to govern itself. It needs a strong hand because it can do great things, but left to its own devices, it destroys itself.
So their solution is to destroy it even more
and then leave
it to waste.
No, they destroy it at its height.
Because that's what I got of the League of Shadows. They want to go into a city.
He says they destroy it at the height of decadence. Yeah. So at the point where they've stopped being productive, at the point where they've reached the height of where... of everything that they can do, and they're not going to do anything good anymore, they're just, you know, partying or whatever... That's when they bring it back to zero, because then at that point, the desperation causes people, it causes innovation. And so that's why civilization re-rises. And so that's why he says, like, when they, you know, they sack Rome, they burn London.
Who thinks of this stuff?
But you have to keep in mind
who
before,
gets a whole army behind them with this intention?
And it convinces them all to follow
them. Psychopath.
Before we even see the beheading scene, I think there's a very good foreshadowing here for how this really is an evil organization. I mean, he says at the beginning of the training that training is nothing without the will to act. Then he makes that whole comment about his father, and you could still at that point play off, oh, maybe he's just trying to burn a fire underneath him. But then he says, those without decency must be fought without pity. And it's just, to me, it's foreshadowing as to how this is not going to be something that Bruce does long term. You could tell, I remember seeing this in the theaters and saying to myself, yeah, this is not going to be, this is where they, there's a split, the divide.
This is a parting ways point.
Yeah.
So he basically freezes Bruce because he drops him into the lake, and he warms him up next to the fire. And then during this, there's another flashback to, I guess Bruce is now in his 20s, and Bruce is being a really little bitch as he comes back to Wayne Manor after being
he's
off at private school.
He's going to the hearing for Shill.
Wait, real quick, before we get to that, I'm sorry. But, which of all, the part where they're fighting on the ice... it's cool because you actually see the practical applications of the gauntlets that Batman ends up using. Like, in the comics, it was always just part of his costume, like just the scalloped things on his gloves.
Yes.
They were just scalloped things on his gloves. In this, there's an actual purpose to them.
Yes.
This armor, they're, you know, they're designed for a specific purpose.
To stop a blade.
It's cool to see.
And also
that
uses them to kind of hook himself later on.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Who should have tore his arm out of the freaking sock?
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
100%.
All of their arms.
Yeah.
Qui-Gon's arm should have been torn out. His arm, his arms probably should have been torn
100%.
Out. His one arm that was holding on probably should have been broken the wrong way and torn out of socket.
But we digress.
He just pulled him back up.
Why didn't he say anything at Shill's hearing, by the way? What's up with that? The judge is like, I understand there's someone from the Wayne family here. It's like, you've been gone for all this time, ass face. Why not fucking say something? And you just sit there
and his whole solution is he's just going to shoot this guy when he gets out anyway.
At this point, he wasn't
He's going to shoot the guy who killed his parents
at this point,
in the courthouse.
Gone for that long. This wasn't after he's been gone for 7 years. This is
he's been gone for school or something.
He's still been in Gotham.
But the process has been going on for at least 4 or 5 years. It's been in the court system. This guy waiting to go on trial, or like he's been, you know, in jail waiting to go to prison. I don't know exactly what the period is for Shill.
He's been trying to get parole.
Parole, that's what it is. So he's been gone part of his sentence. So he's been gone 4, 5, 6, 8 years, something like that, and he's up for some kind of parole. So I don't know. He's been gone for a certain period of time. So we haven't seen him for a while.
He comes out of the courtroom, and Bruce is getting ready to shoot him with a little gun he has in his coat, and someone else does it first. And... Then you have Falcone. I guess you find out that Falcone paid the judge money to get Chill out of jail.
To make the hearing public.
So that he could shoot him.
Yeah.
So that he could get murdered. Not that Falcone shot him, but like Falcone had somebody shoot him.
Right. He pushed to have the hearing made public so that somebody could get in to shoot him.
Yeah. The woman who went to shoot him.
No, exactly. That's, yes.
So then they go for a little pleasant drive around.
Little car ride.
But it's great because at that point when they pull up in front of the bar, and he's like, I'm not the good person like my father was. And she's like, what do you mean? And he shows her the gun.
And she slaps him.
She doesn't waste time with bullshit words, or she doesn't like, Bruce, you can't. No, Bruce, you can't. She looks at him and slaps him twice.
Yeah.
She does say your father would be ashamed.
I love the way she says that. Your father would be ashamed of you.
Yeah, like, I thought that was good.
There's such weight to that, because the reason that you're doing it is for them, but it's not for them, it's for you, because they wouldn't want you to do this, you know?
So then,
and then we go to this. What is my second or third favorite scene of this entire movie.
Joey Mandela dictating the pace.
Yeah, get out of here.
I'm sorry. No,
I don't care who. I don't care. We're moving along. That's all I care about.
I just have this highlighter here that this next scene is one of my favorite scenes in the entire movie here, where it's the meeting between Falcone and Bruce Wayne, and I think it's great.
Yeah, Falcone, the guy who plays Falcone. The guy who plays Falcone. I don't know his name off the top of my head.
I love that guy.
Dude, he played in The Patriot. He played Lord Cornwall.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Really good.
What a versatile actor.
He was in The Exorcism of Emily Rose.
I think he was also the guy in Rush Hour, the main enemy in Rush Hour.
What was his name?
Juntao.
Got himself into some shit.
He's very convincing in every role.
Yo, I'll tell you what though. This scene is great for a couple reasons.
He's also in another history movie. I believe I've seen him play George Washington in something. In John Adams he played Benjamin Franklin.
Okay.
Yes. So he's played Lord Cornwallis on the British side in a Revolution movie, and then in an HBO miniseries, he played Benjamin Franklin.
This is all good stuff.
I love this guy.
And I think
he could do anything. I'm in.
I think that I love how we start to see how the Narrows is the slums, because like basically in my notes it's the slums, but every time they refer to the slum they refer to the Narrows.
I'm sorry, I have to say this. She'll tell me your dad begged like a dog.
Yeah,
begged. Like a dog.
Yeah, spirit, kid. I'll give you that.
But you never...
11-year-old man, anyway.
But you never tasted desperate. I love that, how he thinks... And I love how Falcone hits the nail on the head.
Yeah.
Because he goes in there, he throws this gun in the water, okay? He's showing it to Dawson, and as he tells Rachel, I'm not good people, because she's like, oh, good people like this, blah, blah, blah. He's like, I'm not good people, and then she says, your father will be ashamed. He really thinks that, like... He's on the other side of the track, so to speak, with these guys. He's like, you never tasted desperate. You always fear. Well, you don't understand this. You never will. You always fear.
Everybody's Italian accents or street thug accents. Yes,
I think because your mommy and your daddy got shot. You know the ugly side of life, but you don't.
And he's right. And you know what? But I like that line. You always fear what you don't understand, because we go even more foreshadowing into what happens later on. But I don't want to get too into it yet.
All I got to say is, how the fuck does Falcone know if he knows the dark side of life? Did Falcone's parents get killed? That's all I got to say.
Well, no, I think it's more like
he's saying
knowing that he had a pampered upbringing, because
he never says. Yeah.
Like Joey said, you've never tasted desperate. You're Bruce Wayne, the Prince of Gotham. You'd have to go 1,000 miles to find someone who doesn't know your name. Like, you're royalty. No, but he fought his way up.
Exactly.
There,
and like
underworld.
This guy
That's
may have known
time.
What it was like to not have food and to not have heat and to not have water, like, and things like that. Whereas Bruce Wayne has never known that. Yes, he had a traumatizing thing happen in his life, but I'm sure a lot of traumatizing things happen to thugs and people like Falcone in their lives and everyone's dying.
I get why Falcone is saying that. I guess I'm just more psychoanalyzing whether or not Bruce Wayne really was affected more than Falcone was by his experiences, because at the end of the day, Bruce Wayne was affected enough by his parents' death to go and do everything he does.
Well, no, I think he's more just saying, like, you're not prepared to do what you think that you're prepared to do. Like, you're making a very rash judgment, and you think that this is who you are now, but it's not. And so you can't come in here pretending like you're one of us because you aren't. You're too squeaky clean to be one of us. Just because this one bad thing happened to you, it doesn't mean that you're a roughneck now.
For all of those of you who
but
watched...
But he proves him wrong, basically.
For all those of you who watched Oz, it's like, you know, when they told Miguel Alvarez, you're not white. I mean, you're too white. And it wasn't just the skin color he was referring to. It means that he didn't come up like they came up. He hasn't been through what they've been through. Yeah, he might have had one or two horrible experiences that might ultimately shape his life in one way or another, but he's never had to day in and day out grind and hustle on the I keep going back to saying the other side of the tracks. But anyway,
well, no, and you said he proves him wrong. Well, he goes and becomes like them. He didn't prove him wrong.
He had to go and do what
he did was prove him right. Because he realizes that. He realizes that he's not going to make a change the way that he is.
So that's when he flashes to actually going to become a criminal
but
in training.
Hold on. Real quick. No, but they have this flashback that from a flashback. Which, like, you...
No, they're going forward a few years.
I understand that, but, like...
A few months.
It's a little bit of weird filmmaking, I'm just saying, to flashback to
he
a flashback, not from going back and forth. It's okay to go back and forth from real time to a flashback. And then the flashbacks progress. But now they're going from a flashback to a progressed flashback.
No,
that's
they're going ahead
saying.
Few years after...
No shit. No, because you've already met Bruce. You've already met Bruce as a person past the time where he's, like living, like, homeless and like, on the streets.
Okay,
they have, like, a montage of him homeless and on the streets.
They're going back to him being a criminal stealing from Wayne Enterprises.
It's when he shares the bread and shit with the kid.
Yeah. I enjoy that they made him have a very human reaction, like wanting to kill his parents. Because in the comics, you're like, his parents die. And then it's like right from there, he's like, I'm going to dedicate my life to becoming the best, you know. And it's like, instead, with this, it's like you would want to do everything possible to kill that person for taking those people from you. And I'm sorry, Adam, you were going
to
say something.
Just to kind of round out what I was saying before, that Falcone had the circumstances that happened to him in his life by no choice of his own, really. It's sort of just the way that his life wound up playing out. The reason that I think Bruce Wayne Bruce Wayne's childhood may have been just as, if not more so, traumatic and life-changing is because it caused Bruce Wayne to want to voluntarily go through all of that stuff.
Yes. No, that's true, but does have to then go through it.
Yeah, correct.
Okay, so what I'm going to do now before we head to our first break of the After Midnight podcast, holiday 2014... I'm going to read basically what happens in the next scene or so. I'm going to go through it and then go around the room and you guys tell me what you each thought of that scene. Then we'll hit a quick ad break. Okay? So basically what happens is after they finally pull back into real life, into real time, Qui-Gon grinds up the flower for him that he had originally brought up the mountain, gets him all fucked up off of it. So he gets all, like, basically when you inhale the
that smoke probably smelled like shit.
Regardless.
I actually think it probably smelled
good. Yeah, it might
smell
nice.
They almost like to dupe somebody, like nature's, like, hidden trick sort of thing.
So he gets Bruce all fucked up, and then Bruce has to then find him in training to become a member of the League of Shadows by basically figuring out where he is in a room full of people, including himself, all dressed exactly the same. And Bruce is also dressed
in formation.
And he is also in the same
It's all very well choreographed.
Outfit. Yes.
I guess they do this a lot.
Yeah, although they do. Every guy who's joined has had to go through something like this.
At first, it was just the one guy, find me.
So,
you're there.
You're right there.
Shit.
He does the formations, just the one dude.
The only problem
try and find me.
The only problem I have with the choreography is just
try
like
and find me.
When I try to think of it, like, does something like this exist in the world?
Possibly.
I don't think so.
That's what they want.
Well, let me get. I'll go to each of you on this whole thing. So he basically passes the training, becomes a member of the League of Shadows, and then the final thing is to kill a guy who had stolen or. What did he do?
It was the same guy. He wanted his neighbor's land, and he killed the guy.
Okay. So he basically won't do that and executes his escape. Bruce executes his escape. He has a big showdown with Ra's al Ghul, which is Qui-Gon Jinn. Or no, he also, I think, fights
Ra's
al Ghul also. And then in the final moments, when he blows up this temple, saves Qui-Gon Jinn from the explosions and sliding down a snow cliff off the edge of a cliff. After he barely saves Qui-Gon from death, Qui-Gon is almost dead already. He drops him at that Asian dude at the Asian place on the corner of the hospital on the mountain. And then goes back to Gotham. All right. Adam Henning, what do you have on all that? And then we'll go to each of you, and then we'll go to a break.
Again, regarding the formation, the well-choreographed stuff, I know you have to suspend your disbelief to some extent, but at the end of the day, Batman is supposed to take place in our universe. But when you have weird Asian
because I feel like it's almost like this, ninjutsu, learning to be a ninja.
Yeah. I know, but even then it's Ninja Turtles, and I think of Ninja Turtles, and I think of
Ninja was around way before Ninja.
We should make Japanese ninjas.
I know,
not just turtles anymore.
I'm not saying that ninjutsu doesn't exist, but what I'm saying is that it's not until you're dealing with concepts like the Ninja Turtles or Batman where you're seeing like these people with masks and these perfectly choreographed and these weird mountainous beautiful.
Honestly, if I would have had to guess, if something
structures,
like if at least one establishment exists like this in the world,
yes,
I would believe it.
There has to be.
I find it hard to believe. I hope we can maybe find evidence of one.
How? They're ninjas. We're never going to know.
If you find them, they're not very good.
Yeah, they're not very good.
Not a school I would want to learn at.
So people have trouble believing in ghosts and all that stuff. But, yes, secret ninjas dancing around
ninjas
in choreographed routines.
Show
me any evidence of them existing.
And some sort of
martial arts. How do we even know they exist if it's supposed to be secretive? I think you guys are just more into, like Batman and Ninja Turtles than I am, maybe. I don't know. You guys like...
But not just for turtles.
Are you more of a Marvel fan?
Not necessarily.
He's more of a ghost fan and demons.
He's more of a no-fun fan.
No, that's not true. I love fun.
All right, everyone, I love fun.
I don't know. I feel like you guys are a little bit more like kids in a candy store with, like, ninjas and stuff. It's just, like, whatever to me.
Martial arts were very popular in the 90s. That's where we grew up.
Fair enough. So when I think of Batman 89 in that canon, I don't think of, like, these such weird circumstances like
Michael Keaton. Keaton breathing the smoke.
Yeah.
No.
Imagine putting Michael Keaton in this role. It would seem so pathetic.
Listen. Those movies are more campy at times, and there's some unbelievable elements in their own right, but it's presented a little bit more unrealistic in general.
Although, in The Fountain with the girls, I can picture Michael Keaton. Like, being like,
I had no problem with that scene, when this movie tries to present itself as realistic for the most part,
I'm serious, Adam. I really think that there are establishments like that, because even through stuff I've learned through the security guard hell over at I can't talk about that, but through the people I there's this guy I know over at Rite Aid who's become like
a ninja.
Like a third degree black belt, but there's up to like 7 degrees, and he was like showing me all this stuff and
training. Like the monks have,
eventually you've got to get to this thing that's almost impossible to pass, and it's got to be, I feel like, something like this.
Okay. Regardless,
Raiden wins.
I just have the way I'll sum it up is this way: I have an easier time picturing something like this, the ritual in that weird little bunker on the mountain happening in the Star Wars universe,
fucking Jabba's palace on the mountain.
What do you think was more realistic for it to happen? One of us to find out that what do you think's more realistic to happen? Someone to see a ghost? Or to someone to see someone who is trained in ninjutsu?
No, not trained in ninjutsu.
Not a turtle.
Not a turtle.
Not somebody who's trained in
ninjutsu anymore.
Not somebody who's trained in ninjutsu. I want to see something that resembles this. what's happening with Bruce Wayne cutting their arm. Well, again, it's just like you guys have a more wondrous imagination with this type of thing.
It's protected by technology.
It's real, though.
It keeps it invisible.
It's real. You guys are like Santa Claus.
No, but my thing is that ninjas. Time out. Time out. Time out. Ninjas are still just people.
Listen, but
ghosts are ghosts.
Listen,
but you guys are still like it's secret. Like, it's secret. We can never see it, but it exists. Whatever. Listen, my bottom line is just that Star Wars universe. This shit is okay. I'm like, oh, give me a break. I want the scene. Then it's like, get it. Like, let's get back to the real world. When I see stuff like this,
ghosts are ghosts.
And then secondly, I think Bruce Wayne also took the jacket of the homeless man. How over the top and stupid. Just go to the store and get a new jacket.
Yeah, go to a fucking a thrift store.
Yeah, exactly.
Go to an Army Navy store.
Since you find out 20 minutes later he was declared dead, now this homeless person has the only remaining piece of fucking Bruce Wayne left.
Yeah.
Oh, you were the last person to see Bruce Wayne alive and you're wearing his coat around like it's yours?
And you have his money and
stuff?
Oh,
yeah, he paid me for my fucking shitty coat. Yeah, I bet. Fucking booty.
Yeah. Exactly.
That crazy Ralph. All right.
And then regarding a couple of the ninjas in this scene, how.
Regarding the rest of the movie.
Regarding these ninjas that we're all talking about.
How pissed off would you be if you were one of the ninjas Bruce Wayne cut in the arm?
Right? And like, they don't say or do anything. Yeah, they would be like, what are you doing?
You fucking asshole.
I don't think they're allowed to. It's
of course they're not.
Come on.
And then
they're trained as well as he is.
Do they talk about I think in this scene that they talk about how the League of Shadows has been destroying cities for centuries. I wonder which ones are on their resume. They go through a few of them, right? Like Rome and whatever.
They go into it later on. I think he mentions like one or two, right? You know, at this point.
Okay, and then also, why were there explosives in the fortress? And how did Bruce Wayne know there would be a branding iron ahead of time?
Well, fake Ra's al Ghul showed him the branding iron beforehand because he would be branded as a member of the League of Shadows once he killed the Chinese guy.
Okay.
So he showed him that and then put it into the fire.
The reason why there's explosives is because they're blowing shit up.
Okay, and then also, in an attempt to avoid killing the murderer, Bruce instead just kills dozens of the League of Shadows members, just like in Batman 89 when he blows up the warehouse
chemicals.
With tons and tons of Joker's men in it. And then did you mention that Alfred...
Commits genocide was the term you used.
Yeah, correct. He does it here, too.
Like, what's his fucking name? The guy, the South African warlord with the fucking kid army.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about.
Coney.
So, once again, they were supposed to, I thought, reset Batman, and it's almost like establish this new set of rules that he doesn't kill. Though, in the first 20 minutes of the movie, he kills dozens of people.
No, he's not Batman yet.
Right.
Well, yeah.
Okay. He's Bruce Wayne.
Okay, so maybe Batman...
He doesn't kill anyone as Batman until the fucking Batmobile chase.
Yeah, and then he kills a bunch of people.
Then he kills cops indiscriminately. No problem.
In this movie?
Within the first 2 seconds of him being in the Batmobile, he runs over that cop car. The way, even though it shows the cop using the CB afterward, the way that tire hits the fucking car, he's crushed that cop to death.
Okay. And then how the fuck did Alfred know to pick him up on Wayne Airlines in the middle of an Asian wilderness?
And open the door right as he's walking. It was all very well. It was like a rap video. It was all very. It comes out with the suit. What's up, Bruce Wayne?
Me,
Alfred. I'm
going to
pick
your
ass up.
He had a GPS on him.
Yeah.
And he sounded the alarm.
He could have just made a phone call. Listen,
ninjas know what they're doing. So, no, but I would be interested. I wish there was something like the blue flower that wasn't just like mushrooms or acid. Because I would be interested to see what it would show me as far as like the fear thing. Because I would... Like, I'm scared of a lot
especially
of things.
I say I fear nothing.
See,
so.
I'm scared of a bunch of things.
Mine would be demons, most definitely.
I would like to know what
it not ninjas, because they're not real.
No, they're not real.
But demons, they're
no
real. That's real.
Unless
that's real ooh, shit.
What's we call it? The perfectly summed up struggle of being Batman when fucking Liam Neeson says, your compassion is a weakness that your enemies will not share. And he says, that's why it's so important, because it separates us from them. And that's... That's Batman. Batman will take it as far as it can go.
Batman is an honorable guy.
He's never supposed to cross that line.
I think... Look, I have just two or three notes on this
section. All right, hit it.
Right here.
Hit it, Joey Mandela.
the flower, you know.
Joey Mandela, what do you think is more realistic, a ninja or a ghost?
A ninja. A ninja.
Exactly.
I've seen a ghost. I've never seen a ninja.
With regards to this.
That's the point.
Yeah.
He's a ninja.
The ghost wasn't a ninja. Okay, go, Joey.
Calvin has a strong opinion on ninjas.
He's a real strong affiliation.
Again, I keep going back to this. Again, he's the only Asian in the room, so I'll take his word on it. You fear your power. And this, by the way, is just layering. I love the scene because it layers the foundation of what is yet to come in the next two movies. He says, you fear your power. What's inside you? Your anger. Your drive to do great or terrible things.
You know who you learned that from?
What?
Yoda.
Yes. And it shows why did he in later movies, every time he quits, it always goes back to this issue. And another thing.
And another thing. You know what?
And he says, you must bask in the fear of others. Become an idea. You know, men fear what they cannot see. You know, he cuts the other guys' sleeves, all this other stuff. But before all this pyro and before all this destruction and the blowing up and everything like that, and before he even learns of the plans to destroy Gotham, this is like pretty much the final point of his training. Yeah, he's gotten all the physical training. He's gotten a lot of the mental training. Now he's gotten this last spiritual. That branding didn't happen. Yeah, he didn't get branded member of the League of Shadows. But the most important thing that goes into his future is basking in the fear of others, becoming an idea. Because men fear what they cannot see. And
foreshadowing people, spoiler alert, he becomes Batman.
Sorry.
Joey Mandela is the best hype man I've ever seen. he can make anything
Flavor
sound
Flav is the best hype man
wonderful.
Ever. Joey Mandela's second.
No, but I think he should be considered a member of the League of Shadows.
Well, he is. I think that's why he didn't need to be branded, because he himself knew that he had passed. And
I mean, the
boom,
sword fight with Ra's al Ghul, where he fucks him up with the quickness. The roof collapses on. Like, if you were in a fucking video game and Ra's al Ghul was like Thrasher at the end of like the first level of Final Fight, it's like, yo, he's mad simple. It's like two A's, two B's, jump kick. That's it. This guy's out of here. You know, like, all right.
The guy at the beginning, the first robot at the beginning of Contra, just like,
and then the elbow
done.
Jump over the one bullet that he fires.
And then the elbow dislocating cliffhanger scene is just, I mean, well, I'll tell you, when I watched it in the movie theater, I think that was one of the IMAX scenes, and it was amazing. I mean, it was just incredible.
I need to go out and buy this movie.
Thank you,
Joey Mandela. All right, what we're doing is we have brought you back.
Joey Mandela has been brought to you by Warner Brothers.
We and WWE. We have been brought you back to the first decade, of the new millennium.
We are
right in the middle. We are 2005, and we will continue this journey with Batman Begins and the conclusion. On the After Midnight podcast
Batman
here
ends.
On the Shining Wizards Network. We'll be right back.
After midnight, we're gonna let it all hang down. After midnight, we're gonna chug a lightning shout.
The Shining Wizards is a weekly wrestling podcast that brings you the ups, downs, ins, and outs of this great sport. Join Kevin, Matt, Tony, and Eddie as they bring to you the latest news, the greatest reviews, and of course, the biggest names in the professional wrestling business. They're serious, they're funny, they're entertaining. They are The Shining Wizards, available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and at ShiningWizards.com. It's wrestling talk and talk about wrestling. Proud members of the Shining Wizards Network, available at ShiningWizardsNetwork.com.
From the current to the way back, join Impact player Phil Rea and Dave Mega Powers on Turnbuckle Throwbacks, dissecting the current wrestling scene while also paying homage to the past. They are the new symbol of excellence in sports entertainment broadcasting, and you can find them on the Shining Wizards Network at ShiningWizardsNetwork.com.
Hey, everyone. This is Justin from the Inconclusive Breakdown Podcast. When you're done with this great episode, we would love for you to give our show a try. We cover pop culture, geek news, music, sports, and, of course, professional wrestling. Just search for Inconclusive Breakdown on iTunes, Stitcher, Spreaker, and SoundCloud.
Still smack dab in the center of the first decade of the new millennium. And now it's really past 12, really past 12. And you are still inside, nice and deep inside, the After Midnight Podcast.
Deeper and deeper.
Deeper and deeper. Deeper and deeper, I am.
That's right, boy.
The 21st Century Broadcasting Marvel, Midnight Mike Norengeyer.
I am Adam Batman Begin. I am Batman Beginning, Batmadam Henning.
That was just a lot of names.
It's your pal, Calvin Brody.
Joey Justice. Yeah, boy. Get in there nice and deep.
Get in there nice and deep.
You really want to do that southern accent thing.
We are back here on the After Midnight Podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, if you haven't already, please do me a favor, do all of us a favor, and head over to Facebook at facebook.com/AfterMidnightPodcast and give us a like over there on Facebook. Obviously, you know, we're a little behind our mother, father, whatever you want to call it, show, The Midnight Jury. But we want you to come by and give us likes and give us a few suggestions maybe for upcoming monthly shows here celebrating pop culture. Monthly.
Calvin looks so intense on the Facebook.
Yeah, doesn't he? Looks really intense.
It looks like he's about to rip you apart. Yeah.
And we want you over there. Tell us what you want to hear. Anything pro wrestling, pop culture, or horror from the years of 2000 to 2010. We are here to get back into Batman Begins, so let's do that, guys.
Yeah, I mean, the building has exploded. The plane has picked him up. He's going back to Gotham, hopefully.
With Alfred on the plane.
Hopefully for good.
I just like that. Alfred starts calling him Master Wayne, because for the past 20 plus years that I've read Batman comics, it's always been Master Bruce.
Carl, Rachel's partner at the DA's office, you know, acts like a complete pussy in the hallway and gets rejected too. And I think.
And this is where you also meet Dr. Crane at this point?
Yes.
Yeah, and
this is where you first meet Dr.
You first meet Dr. Crane in the courtroom while she is trying to get another one of Falcone's guys off the
move to Arkham.
Yep, move him to Arkham, move him to an insane unit.
So
yep.
He can take care. Yeah, the corruption is planted there. And then there's this random bat in the house that reminds him to go and find the cave. I don't know if you guys noticed. I don't know if one of you guys was going to point out, oh, how did he know to find the cave? But it's this random bat that flew into the house. He's like, where's this bat coming from?
No, it's not even just the bat. I mean, it is the bat in the house, but then Alfred says, oh, there's a bat in the house, sir. They must be nesting someplace on the grounds. And that's when Bruce Wayne's like, oh, yeah, the fucking cave that I still dream about to this fucking day.
Oh, yeah, that cave.
That killed me.
That I woke up in a cold sweat from this morning.
Yeah.
He basically reveals himself back. He goes to Wayne Enterprises and reveals himself to be alive. And he basically says, I know you guys are kind of in control, and I don't want control of Wayne Enterprises. I just want a job, you know, so I can learn more about the company that my father created. So he wants a job in applied sciences.
Can I ask?
And that's with Fox, Lucius Fox.
One thing I forgot to ask is, why is it when Carl does act like a pussy and gets rejected, why is it like Dawes is like, oh yeah, we've been through all that? It's like, are we really to believe that Rachel Dawes has never like had sex with anybody or has like never been in a relationship with anyone? Like she's so
virginous.
Yes, yeah, so she's so and not even just virginous. She's such a bad attitude towards just, you know, putting herself out there in any way, shape, or form. Are we led to believe that she's never had a relationship?
Well, see,
Why do you guys get that idea?
We've been through all that to Carl.
Well, no, I took it to mean because she says this is going to help us bust the biggest crime boss in the city or something like that. Don't you care about that? And he's like, I care about you more. And she says, we've been through all this. I took that to mean I thought they were together. And I thought she took that.
I think they were.
I thought she was saying it like, look, we've been over this. Like, don't let my safety get in the way. Like,
exactly. That's exactly how I took it. Yeah.
Is the most important thing that there is. Don't worry about my safety.
Yeah. But then when he gets iced later on by the storage containers by the crooked cops.
Well, she's like, oh, yeah, my boss has been missing for 2 days.
Yeah, exactly. Like, my boss has been, there's absolutely no, like, heart bleeding for him whatsoever. They're not involved in any way.
I think they are actually involved.
I think he's just a jabroni.
At the very least, he's taken her out on a couple dates and he's trying to.
Yeah, she may have tried, but I don't think she's ever opened herself up. And I think
he was the warm-up guy for Bruce Wayne.
I think they've had sex once, honestly.
She was holding herself
a few times.
That's what I'm getting at. Is has she been just in her head, just been holding out for Bruce to come back? Her mysterious white knight and shining army? Oof.
Army.
That was racially charged.
Yeah, so much racial
white and shining armor.
After in the After Midnight podcast.
He goes. He gets this job with Applied Sciences, and Lucius Fox is showing him around, and he shows him the stuff that the Wayne Enterprises
shows him the five or six things he exactly needs to be Batman.
I think he knew those are the exact things that would be in Applied Sciences, so that's why he wanted to be there.
Oh, like, well, yeah, no, absolutely, but the fucking bat suit.
It was cost $300,000.
Yeah.
For one suit.
But it's like, it's one thing to know that maybe Applied Sciences built these things and there are prototypes laying around there. And it's another thing to be shown exactly these things. Like, does he say, so do you have any sort of like
Batman stuff?
Battle suit or anything like that?
I don't view it that way. I view that he was definitely interested in going to Applied Sciences to help or to create the things that he had in mind. But I think that he wound up going this route in using equipment inspired by these original prototypes because of what he was shown at Applied Sciences. I don't think he was expecting it, though.
But it's the showing that makes it. So you have this guy. Oh, okay, so you're Bruce Wayne. All right, show you around? Sure. So here is a suit of modern, flexible, versatile armor. Here is
Batarangs.
A gun, and here
all the here's a bell
that, like, if you wanted to, you could probably glide.
I will say it is legitimate because we hear earlier at the board of directors meeting him saying, Earl is saying, oh yeah, these are very, very healthy growth sectors, yeah, blah blah blah, and then this other guy's like, I don't think Thomas Wayne would have considered heavy arms manufacturer a suitable cornerstone of our business model. And then it's like, oh, we can't keep thinking about what Thomas Wayne would or would not have done, blah, 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 we're going public, blah, 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 blah. You know, I just think it speaks to this. They're going to have all this crap lying around, all this, I mean, it's legitimate. And,
I'm not doubting the them having it.
What he's saying is the credibility of how he showed him the exact things.
Five or six things, and it's exactly what you need to know that we have
in order to become Batman.
No, but he gave very good reasons why. All this is the stuff that's just lying around that wasn't used. Why wasn't it used? Oh, they didn't think that a soldier's life was worth $300,000.
So why didn't he show him? Why didn't he show him a $300,000 weather balloon that the government didn't want it?
I think the point didn't want it. I'm all out of sorts.
We're now shown again the legitimacy that this is like Tony Stark Industries. This is now like a company that sells industrial grade weapons to the government. That this is what they do now. So, you know, but my favorite part is
the prototype.
I especially like the tumbler. Oh, you wouldn't be interested in that.
Joey, it's two different things. What they're currently building for the marketplace and what they had in storage there. That what they had in storage there was what Thomas Wayne was interested in creating. I think the point, though, is that Bruce Wayne wound up going. He didn't have those things in mind when he went down there. He used those things because once he saw them, he saw their potential, and he saw that he could use them for his crusade on crime. But I don't think that he had them in mind. Secondly, Mr. Earl, the evil executive, doesn't like Lucius, and he doesn't want him around. Why didn't he just fire him instead of sending him into this basement bunker area? That's my first question.
Well, you can't just fire him just to fire him. Like,
if he's not doing anything anymore, if you're running a company and you don't have a position that does anything, if you have a mail sorter and you no longer have a mail room, you're not going to keep him.
higher. Yeah, that's true. That's true.
That's why he merges in with Archives and then fires Fox. Didn't you get the memo?
No, I know, but Thomas Wayne died decades ago, so we're led to believe that Lucius Fox has literally been sitting there designing
because he hasn't been voted. He was voted off the board of directors because Earl was able to
I think it
would
a bad publicity move to get to fire him.
Yeah, and
during those times,
Earl,
because he was a member of the board.
Earl convinced the board of directors to kick him off the board and to send him down into the quote-unquote dead end that leads to nowhere.
After this whole meeting of Fox and seeing some of the stuff he has available, Alfred and Bruce now go back down into the cave. He already went in once, which we didn't talk much about, but he did go in there and kind of make his one with the bats.
Yeah.
And let them fly around him.
Be there, and they were like, all right.
Yeah, they flew around him all dramatically. Well, right now, Alfred and Bruce are now shedding light on the Batcave by installing electricity and other things like that. Then there's a montage of him preparing the bat suit and some of the weapons, creating them for what is going to become Batman. And then you have a scene with Gordon with Fatty Cop. And I forget what happens in this scene. I just kind of have it. I guess nothing big. Can
Flash.
I move on?
His name is Flash.
Yeah, I'm gonna call him Fatty Cop.
He's shaking down a local business for quote unquote protection money, and he comes back to the car and says, "Oh, keep offering, but I know you never want a taste." Gordon, he keeps offering some of the money, and he's like, "Oh, you're making a stink."
Yeah, like you see it for real.
and he's saying, "Oh, you know, you're making us nervous, not taking even a taste." And so, you know, he says,
"I'm no rat."
Well, so
besides, in a city this bad, who would I even rat to?
Next scene is Bruce preparing and using some of his training to prepare to become the Batman character. And Bruce is out on the rooftops of Gotham and sneaks up on Sergeant Gordon and talks to him real quickly and tells him he's one of the good guys. And if he needs someone in this department of law, he needs to go to Rachel Dawes. She'll help him do what he needs to do and try and get this city in order, then runs off.
Oh no! You need a DA. No, you need to get leverage on Judge Faden, and you need a DA willing to prosecute.
And that's Rachel Dawes.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
But they need the leverage
now. I'm sorry. Go ahead. They need the leverage for what?
No, they need leverage. So that's what leads to getting the pictures of him with the hooker or whatever. And he lays down on the ground in the subway after
Judge Faden.
Now Fox finally shows him the cape and the tumbler. I think there should have been another way to figure out where the Batmobile came from. Because why would, like, okay, we're talking about
why the use that vehicle?
Yeah. And the military spends so much money, and they said, I guess it was able to jump and not make the bridge.
Yeah, like, the bridge couldn't tow the bridge properly.
Let me tell you.
Why wouldn't the military use this for something else? Put guns on it.
Can I tell you?
Like they do in Dark Knight Rises.
From personal experience, I'll tell you. From bridging with trucks in foreign countries under a combat environment,
but we cannot tell you where.
I'll tell you right now that tumbler would have been the shiznit.
Exactly, that's what I'm saying. Like, if you can't use it to necessarily make a bridge, you could use it for something else. That thing is fucking usable.
No, just for getting the bridges.
Hell, you can get around in fucking a city.
Get the bridge to work.
I mean, that thing looks like if they
could. And I'm sure if they could come up with that machine, they could figure out a way to get the bridge to work.
Yeah.
People just do that regularly without that machine.
What was
figure
Lucius,
out a way to get bridges to work.
What was Lucius Fox saying the problem was with it?
I think he said that it couldn't get.
Something about making the. It was meant to jump things to get to the other side to make bridges so that you could get, you know, infantry and whatever across.
It couldn't make the jump because I guess maybe it was too heavy.
No, I think it could make the jump, but it couldn't tow the load to make the bridge.
Yeah. He said the. The tumbler and the turbo works fine, but they never got the bridge part right.
So just another fail, a product that got halfway through.
And then they just have it lying around. Like, if I was those board members of Wayne Enterprises, why aren't they all, like, at Christmas parties, getting all drunk and going down to Applied Sciences?
Or trying to make cheaper versions of these great innovations that Thomas Wayne and Lucius created.
Well, all I know is that it would be awesome to have the tumbler in real life, but I think that the tumbler in this movie makes a great Batmobile. I think it's awesome. I think it's believable. I think it's starting to give you a clue as to how over the top this series is going to get, but I really like how this one is. Of all the three new movies, this one's the least over the top one.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it took me a little while to warm up to the tumbler. But I love it. I love the just the angles of it, the different flaps, all the just everything about it. It's cool. It's cool stuff.
It could go to such top speeds and then pull those brakes and everything. Yeah. Just the way to make, yeah.
Giant tractor tires.
I'll be the one guy that says that the 89 Batmobile, I just really like it much better.
Oh, no, I like that one better.
Absolute favorite.
But if I had to, but I honestly think that the Tumbler seems to be better.
More
realistic and more, like, if I had to pick one for style, I'd pick the 89 Batmobile. Also, if I had to pick it for use, I'd pick the Tumbler.
The 89 Batmobile, like, am I really led to believe this is going to deflect machine guns? Like, the real Tumbler looks like, damn, maybe that could actually withstand a few gunshots. You know, I don't know. But that's just me talking. Thwarted mugging. Did we get past that?
Well, I'm to where Falcone is with Fatty Cop.
Yeah, that's right before the mugging part. This is where they're at, like, the docks.
They're starting to realize that Rachel Dawes is the person that's causing a lot of their problems, and Fatty Cop offers to shoot Joey Potter, and they're ambushed by Batman. And then it's the Rachel thwarted mugging or attacking.
That's a great scene where he scares the shit out of, like, seven grown men. Yeah.
No, well, just the one where he's behind
you. Yeah, I love that.
Like, Batman.
First of all, yelling, "Where are you?" Like, "I'm over here."
When he just goes, "Here."
Yeah.
So good. That scene says chills up your back. You're like, "That's Batman."
Yeah.
That is Batman.
That is Batman. And then, like, when he once he picks off the first, like, four guys, then he drops down into, like, the crowd of, like, the six or seven guys, and he beats the shit out of them. And it's all shaky camera work, and I kind of wish...
And I'm sorry, during this scene, towards the end, when he sees the fucking homeless guy in his coat.
Yeah.
Fuck that. Yeah. I hate that shit. Yeah, that's cheese. But go back to what you're at.
But he fights the six or seven guys, and it's all shaky camera work, and I kind of wish... It was more like the choreographed fighting like you see in the various Arkham games to where, like, you know, he could block one guy and then while he's doing that, you know, duck under the swing of another guy and then do this and then that and the other thing. But I like at the same time that I think the idea is you're not supposed to fully see Batman yet. You're not supposed to see
the ski mask, which was like when he first went to see Gordon.
Yeah.
To now doing this, which is it's like little teasers and tastes. Yeah. And you're building up to seeing it, and I think I agree 100%.
So you know he has the cowl and all that, but you don't get to see Batman just yet.
And I think it's a nice throwback. First of all, it's a nice throwback to the original, you know, "Where are you?" And then I also have all the moves that he did were directly from his training. So it's like now you see, like, where all the training immediately comes into play.
Now we're getting to your mugging scene. So Rachel is about to get attacked by Falcone's thugs in like an above ground subway station.
Let me just tell you guys, the one thing that I take away from this scene is that it's the ideal place for bad shit to happen. It does happen. There's two muggers. The one guy who's clearly on his cell phone, and she knows from the minute she gets off the train that this guy's coming after me. So she gets off the train all paranoid, as she should be. Two guys come to mug her, as they do. Batman, you know...
makes a save.
Batman makes his first, like, official save in full regalia. And then, after he leaves, throws...
Before he leaves, he throws
the pictures on the ground.
No. She goes, "Who are you?" And I wrote, "Bruce in a bat suit," because it just looked like Bruce in a bat suit, and she couldn't figure that one out. I had a hard time believing that because it was very obviously him.
Of course.
Agreed.
She's a DA, not a detective.
Exactly. She's not on the beat. And then immediately after he drops the things down, the pictures down, and she picks them up, the leverage on Judge Faden that they need with him with the hooker, like, immediately after Batman and the other guys leave, there's a cop that comes by and says, "Everything okay up there, miss?"
Yeah, actually, I make note of that because I wonder, was he actually coming to help or was he supposed to find her body? Because she's supposed to be dead by this point.
Ooh, I thought it was just cheesy, stupid.
Oh, that's a good thought.
Yeah.
That's a great thought.
The cops are all on fucking Falcone's payroll anyway.
Outstanding observation, Calvin.
Yeah,
I knew there's a reason why you were here.
Or he was standing close by and choosing not to do anything because he was paid off.
And then after that was supposed to come up and be like, "Oh, my God, this is terrible."
Now I got fucking paperwork I got to do.
So
he hangs
the one guy up on the searchlight of the police station. Or the theater
one guy,
or wherever.
Falcone.
Yeah, and
was it the police station? I think it was at the docks.
Okay. Still. Regardless, it was a bat signal.
This is where you're leaving out the part where what should we call it? He fucking rips him out of the sunroof because he's like, who are you? And he rips it out and he goes, I'm Batman.
Yeah.
And yeah, you get the, after that, you get the shitty, nice coat. But you nice get coat. that I'm Batman, and you see him for the first time. That's great stuff.
And I think what's insane here is right after this, you see the chief. I don't know if you guys skipped over it. The chief is talking to his troops, and he says, quote, unquote, and I think this is the most hypocritical line in the goddamn movie. He says, nobody takes the law into their own hands in my city. What could be further from the goddamn truth
in Gotham City? Yeah, it's run by
Falcone. Everybody's taking the law into their own hands. His men, Falcone's men, himself, citizens, who isn't taking the law? There's only like two people, Bruce and Gordon, and Rachel, who are not taking the law into their own hands.
Well, now they are.
Well, I wonder if that's...
And now, two of them are.
Now they are.
I wonder if that's how, like, far removed from reality the chief is, that he thinks, you know, that there isn't the corruption that there blatantly is everywhere in the city.
So basically, Rachel's very happy when Batman did meet up with her. She's happy because he gave her photos and evidence and stuff she needs in order to take care of the situation. But back at the mansion, Alfred is reminding Bruce that basically, yo, Bruce, you know, you're really getting into this Batman thing, but you got to remember you're still a person. You still got to
fucking beat up.
Yeah, you've got to still like let people know that Bruce Wayne is still you know, it does has some. Otherwise, you're going to become someone that they suspect of being Batman.
Wait a second, you guys forgot that the microwave emitter was stolen. You've got the whole ship scene where
that hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, it does have. It happens right before.
It absolutely does not. It happens after this.
It happens before.
It happens right after this.
I just wanted to mention
but it definitely happens before dinner.
I'm not sure if we were introduced to the little kid. I think that he has a run-in with Batman.
After the dinner. After the dinner with the host.
Oh, I'll just mention real quick that there's a lot of clotheslines with clothes drying out in the rain.
It's pouring out there. Like, first of all, so the narrow is just Hong Kong. Is that?
That's
what it looks like.
No, it's interesting that you say, again, with the Asian references today, I'll say it's interesting you point this out, Calvin. When they do the panning shots, not of the building, like the GM building, I think they're clear landmarks, like downtown Wall Street.
Like a tumor on fucking Gotham City.
When they do the far pan shots and it looks like little sliver peninsulas and you could tell which one is the Narrows, I really think that it does almost – there's two of them. It almost does look like Hong Kong. I think that's very spot on.
All right, so like you said, after Bruce is kind of taking it in that he has to also play Bruce Wayne if he's going to be playing Batman – the Wayne Enterprises boat is taken by someone, is taken hostage with the water vaporizer weapon on it.
While douchebag jabroni executive is explaining to Mr. Earl, well, for some reason Earl is just sitting in the boardroom of directors with a bunch of paperwork in front of him, just doing paperwork he's not in his own office. He's in the boardroom without a board meeting going on. I mean, did Warner Brothers really not have the money to just get a scene with his own office in it? But
yeah, just
anyway.
Blue screen work.
Anyway, so he's letting him know as if he's like the dumbest person on earth. Like he's letting him know in like kindergarten terms what's going on. Meanwhile, we're watching these assholes who are letting this microwave emitter. And what gets me is if it's boiling all water around it, isn't it making the people explode like as well?
Yeah. On average, the human body in males is 60% water. On females, it's 55% water. So really, that boat should have just been a red sludge.
And it should just be a weapon of mass destruction.
Good point.
That we
what
would
the
not
fuck's that about?
Yeah, that makes absolutely no sense.
And so now they make weapons of mass destruction at Wayne Enterprises. So I just want us to.
That's what the guy was the guy was talking about. Where you know, I don't think Thomas Wayne would have supported our fucking making this. Like this thing that's very obviously outlawed by like the Geneva Conventions. Like you're gonna be in the desert and vaporize the water supply. You're making an entire.
I do see how the ship is fucked. But I don't.
And literally at the end of the movie, when it's on and the train is going down, it should have been like every building should have been a splatter of blood as passed as the people just like exploded.
Should have been the whole. You should have been able to track that thing by the fucking red left behind.
Okay, so. You cut back, and now Bruce is playing Bruce and pimping like Bruce. There's people talking about Batman. Bruce is just spending money.
I like him in this scene.
He buys the hotel.
Yeah.
I have a big problem with that.
Yeah, me too.
Because buying this hotel. So, really?
So he put money in the dude's pocket. Yeah. How much was it? Like $1 billion?
You write a check and put it in the pocket of some sort of low-level functionary? Because it's more likely that he's going to cash that check and just be like, fuck you.
Yeah.
So even if now you're really going
to buy that hotel. He writes it out to cash.
Yeah. Now, even if you're really going to buy that hotel, now you got to shell out even more money. And, like, I get that you're, like, a quadrillionaire or whatever, Bruce Wayne, but, like, this is silly.
That's like going to Applebee's and being like, I'm buying Applebee's and just signing it and putting it in the general manager's pocket.
There's the tiniest
$23 billion. There you go.
There's the tiniest sliver of plausibility here because it could, it could be a small business owner, and that could be the owner, the owner's son, or something like that.
I think that's
But what if the owner was like, I'm not selling?
No.
I'm suing you.
You're just some guy with money that doesn't mean
I just want you out of here.
Yeah, I want you in jail.
Here's what it could be. He was looking to buy that property anyway, and he was only, you know, like he was thinking it over, and he went to go check it out before he was made his final decision, and he went there and he decided, yes, I am going to buy it.
But you can't. That's not how you buy.
But a currently operating business
that you're having dinner in. Everybody, this Perkins is mine now.
Actually,
the food that you're eating, we don't serve it anymore. Fuck you, get out.
It wasn't actually bought at that moment, but I think he was just giving the clerk or whoever it was just like a little tip. In his pocket,
but
he had decided that he was going to accept the offer that was on the table by the owner of the business, and that he was going to buy it.
He's pimping hoes. He bumps into Rachel
on his way out of the hotel.
Most inopportune moment. Oh, the pinnacle of
why is that the most inopportune moment? He's looking like a banging ass awesome like bro.
To me, Christian Bale looks like. He in real life is at the pinnacle of awkwardness. When he sees her, he's soaking wet, and the girls are all like, "Oh, we have some mojito toast for you to buy."
I love that scene. I make note of that. But it's supposed to be uncomfortable because he knows that this is his first time seeing her since he's been back, and so this is the first impression, and he knows that it's all an act, but he can't tell her that.
Yeah,
not yet. Because
so it's supposed to be uncomfortable.
So basically,
and she's saying about, it's not what you are underneath; it's what you do that matters. Another foreshadowing.
Yeah, and
it's
that
like,
comes
it's
up
like,
later.
It's like the last. It's like the last of what are definitely three or four pieces of serious foreshadowing.
So the next thing that happens is you come to Dr. Crane in Arkham Asylum with Falcone, who's trying to get off. He's like, "Do what you do with everybody else."
He's not at Arkham.
Okay, he's like, "Do what you can to get me into whatever."
The walls are closing in.
And Dr. Crane, of course, does his. Well, I'll show you my mask. I want to ask your opinion on it or whatever.
So the interrogation room is not monitored in any way, shape, or form.
No.
Can we give Crane? By the way, they're understaffed and they're way over. Can I give Craig? I don't know this actor's name, but can I give?
God, we're understaffed. This is insane.
I don't know Crane's the guy who plays Crane.
Cillian Murphy. But
we can't afford surveillance equipment.
The same guy from 28 Days Later.
He's a very good actor.
Cillian Murphy. He's terrific.
Mike just breezes right over it. He says, "Would you like to see my mask?" It's so funny the way
he's so meek. I know it's probably not intimidating to a guy like yourself, but the other crazies in here, they can't stand it.
Yeah, exactly.
I just wanted to say now, as good of a time as any, that I really like the Scarecrow in this movie. He's not shoved down your throat, but I love the actor.
I love
the way the Scarecrow is portrayed.
Yep.
And
I
really
can all agree on that. The actor.
Yeah.
Crane?
Scarecrow.
And I really love the fact that he makes a cameo in the newest Batman movie. He's actually the judge when chaos reigns over the city, like the kind of the crooked criminal judge.
I liked him. I liked him showing up in the last one too.
So he shows him his mask, shoots him with his fear gas or whatever, and moves him to Arkham Asylum.
And then you have the nice. Friendly, what Adam, you were looking forward to seeing was the chat that involves the kid at the end. It's when Gordon and Batman chat at Gordon's house. He just magically appears.
And he goes, I think you're trying to help him. Then Batman is just gone.
And I know that it's very colored by my having watched these movies. But honestly, who could have played a better Commissioner Gordon than fucking Gary Oldman?
Yeah, no,
Gary
that was
Oldman
good. That was
the absolute perfect Gordon in these movies.
Oh, he's great.
But what you call it? But yeah, that's when Gordon fucking tells him where to find Flash. And again, I mentioned it before, but this is before the Bat voice is obnoxious. I don't know where I swear to God. Swear to me. Just swear so, to me. Like, it's tough sounding. Like, it's only later when it gets ridiculous that you're like, all right. But, like, right then, like, when you see him, because again, this is the first time, really, that he's doing the Batman intimidation, you know, and you see it, and that's... It was
he doesn't have to hurt the guy at all. He just has to intimidate
him. And I thought that Flash got what he deserved. You know, Asif Mandi or whoever it was that that serves the falafel at the truck. He's digging through. He goes to the bottom of the pile. Gets the big money. He sees what he's doing. He's like, Flash, man, I have kids to feed. Oh, what? They don't like falafel? And he walks away eating a falafel sandwich.
But it's all pouring. The falafel's all soaking wet.
Soggy. Yeah, it looks all gross.
Delicious. By the way, I love falafel.
Soaking wet falafel.
But anyway, you know, I just figured I'd point that part out. But, you know, yeah.
This guy's like the Eckhart of this movie.
Yeah, exactly. I thought it was going to be Eckhart. When I first saw it, I thought it was going to be, I thought he was supposed to be Harvey Bullock. This is when Batman goes to the apartment where they get the drugs delivered. And this is when he comes across the kid that grows up to play Joffrey on fucking Game of Thrones.
Yes.
And the kid's like, he sees him there, and he's like, you are real. None of the other kids at school believe.
So he gives him a taser?
Why does Batman... No, it's the periscope thing. Yeah. Why does Batman give a fuck that kids don't believe... Batman should have been like, look over there. And when he sees his left, instead, he gives him a piece of what is undoubtedly Wayne.
Look over there.
But keep in mind.
It's the lamest way. Like, yeah, he doesn't with Gordon. He has to play a game with this kid. He just, look over there.
It is legitimate, though, because they're ordering these things to not be conspicuous. They're ordering all these items in blocks of 10,000. So he's just, I mean, he can give one away.
He orders the mask and shit in blocks of 10,000. I would imagine the equipment is from fucking Applied Sciences.
But I'm sure they have plenty of
it. But hell, you know, Wayne Enterprises spent years developing these specs for the highly advanced military, and then the military turned them down because they cost way too much money to make. But fuck it, I'm going to give it to this kid.
Yeah, now this douchebag kid's going to walk back inside, and his parents are going to be like, where the fuck did you get this thing? And he's like, Batman fucking gave it to me. And it says Wayne Enterprises on the side.
Yeah.
A week after fucking Bruce Wayne came back and started
on the back property
there.
Of Bruce Wayne.
Yeah.
Carved. And etched
property of Bruce Wayne,
stolen man, stolen by Batman,
written in crayon.
Yeah. And we're
the B's backward because Batman's a moron.
And we're really exposed here. I think this is the height of Batman's exposure as a human superhero, because he takes a serious fall while on fire after getting.
Well, hold on. Before we get to him and seeing Scarecrow, what do you got?
Just in general, I think. They did a much better job in this movie of incorporating and making the integral Batman characters more meaningful. Like in Batman 89, Commissioner Gordon, you see like one or two times. Who does Lando Calrissian play?
Harvey Dent.
Harvey Dent, you see him like, I mean, you don't see him in this movie, but they do give him Harvey Dent a little bit of credit as the original series goes on. But those peripheral characters don't really have much significance in the original Batman 89. And obviously, Commissioner Gordon is extremely important to this movie. So I think they do a better job of honoring the comics in general.
He's the only one that's not on acid in the Narrows for a good 3 hours.
True.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, good point. They just flesh out those characters better. Like you said, Commissioner Gordon is spot on.
So when Scarecrow does does confront Batman, not only does he hit him with the fear gas, but he
concentrate.
But he also does set him on fire and send him out of a building down to the ground. So he does take a beating in this scene in his first. But
and
I mean, granted,
he
Scarecrow
finally is able to get to the top of the building with one of his grappling hooks, and when he gets to the top. You see him take out like a Nokia.
Alfred.
Yeah, he takes out a Nokia from 1999, and he's, Alfred, help! And I think it's like the
wasn't it like a Nextel?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, where you at?
Where you at, Alfred?
Where you at?
It was.
Where you at?
Even Batman uses it. Nextel.
And then he's in the back of the car, just fucking mumbling all crazy. And fucking, I like that it showed Alfred crying though. Because, again, it humanizes it. Because in the comics...
Oh, yeah, yeah, he's in the back. He's having
fucking Batman's butler. But it's like, no, he's fucking Batman's He's Batman's Earth's
father. Well, it takes him 2 days.
Keep in mind, this is before they have the antidote. So when he's having his seizures in the back there, this guy legitimately thinks he's going to die.
Yeah.
He actually takes 2 days to nurse him back to health.
Well, yeah. While he's in the vehicle, however Alfred is carting him around, he goes, "Poison. Blood. Blood poisonous." And I was just like, just because you're on a hallucinogen doesn't make you a nincompoop. People on hallucinogens can still form sentences. It's just like things are distorted a little bit.
Later on, Crane justifies this deadly effect by saying, "Hey, I gave her a concentrated dose. She doesn't have long." So I think these concentrated doses that he gives to people like Batman or to Rachel are meant to kill them. Like, are meant to be...
It's meant to snap your mind. Like.
No, and I still get that. I just think that even when you're in a really dark or distorted atmosphere, even in your mind, I think you can still say, I've been poisoned.
Well, it's just like the blood bursting in humans. We're going to have to just accept it.
So here's another thing. This is something I've hated in every Batman movie that they ever do. It's like you don't even wait a movie to fucking hold what's supposed to be the biggest secret in this world of who's Batman. In the first movie, he like just tells Vicki Vale, and then she's not even there anymore.
Alfred fucking lets her in the Batcave.
Exactly, like, and it's like, and then in this one, it's just like, who's this Batman? Who's this Batman? Now, granted, Lucius Fox may know something, but literally, while he's unconscious, whatever, fucking Alfred's just like, "Oh, Lucius Fox, he's Batman. You're going to have to come here and help me nurse him back to health." I feel like they give it away so easy in these movies.
I like, though, in the Nolan
universe. I'm sorry to interrupt.
Tells Rachel in this movie.
Realistic. If you're going to make this a more realistic version, it has to be more realistic.
No, but he does it in both versions.
Yeah, so now they have the antidote. Rachel doesn't have it yet. Rachel still but she has the balls to go to Arkham, knowing how dangerous
it takes Lucius
is.
Like a second.
Like, why
to get an antidote?
And why is it if you're seeing that she's, if you say, "Oh, hey, well,
good thing
why,
he didn't spray him with like cancer."
Why is it she's
because then there would have been no nothing.
And now we're led to believe she's pushing for an independent review of Falcone, and then
because Crane has done this so many times with so many Falcone's men. And she knows that it's an out.
But why not bring some police backup with her?
Because he owns... Kid, I own the police!
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think she senses any danger from Crane.
She doesn't sense danger, but she knows that he's shady. She knows that he's fucking... That he's doing mob favors.
Yeah. Downstairs. Like, come on, get the hell out of here.
Well, he doesn't invite her downstairs. She goes to leave, and he says, "I want to show you something." He doesn't say, "We're going to go into the basement now."
Yeah, look,
but, like, she should have known when she got out and it was the basement. Like, really what he should have done was held his breath and just
passed her. Hold on. You're talking about when they go to visit Falcone in Arkham.
Hold on.
You missed a few things.
Did we?
You did. You missed a few things. First off, she does visit Bruce to give him his birthday present.
Oh, yeah, that.
Which is the arrowhead that they found.
Finders, keepers.
At that point, you get a very good look at her vehicle, which is a 1995 Ford Taurus, which was 15 years old even at the time. I just thought she could afford a better car.
It looked very similar to...
No, go ahead.
It was 10 years old at the time.
No, I was just going to say it looked
I think it was an older car, maybe.
Very
I don't know what year actually it was. I wrote 15 years, but if it was do you know what year the car was?
Maybe 90.
Was yeah, I made that up.
You
sorry.
Said in your note that it was a 95. That's what I'm going.
No, I said it was just 15 years old. I made up 95 right now.
So then, this is also when Fox is approached by the head of the board and he is fired.
No. You just skipped a whole bunch of crap.
No, if you guys are talking about when Falcone is in Arkham. And Crane and Rachel are talking outside his thing.
Yeah.
That hasn't happened yet.
Really?
I'm pretty sure it is happening right now.
I write everything exactly in order as it happens.
She sees the operation. She gets drugged herself.
Yeah, she sees Falcone right now.
And Crane says he's been working for Ra's al Ghul because he gets his ass whooped.
Yeah, when she gets sprayed.
Yeah,
I know.
Okay, so that's what we're up to. SWAT team.
Okay, so we skipped over all the other stuff.
What other stuff?
The fact that Fox is approached by the head of the board.
He wants all the information on the microwave emitter.
And
thinking that he goes just by the code number, thinking that Lucius Fox wouldn't know what it is. And Lucius Fox is like, "Oh, the microwave emitter." And he's like, "Fuck you."
Yeah, you know, he said, yeah, he said, I was fired for asking too many questions. And basically he said, oh, what, did you lose one? If he hadn't made that smart-ass little comment there, he wouldn't have lost his job probably. But he said, oh, yeah, I'm going to merge archives with you and fire you. Didn't you get the memo?
Okay, so now we're to the scene where she is visiting Arkham with Dr. Crane.
Visiting? She's there to interrogate.
And she thinks that Falcone is faking it, when in actuality even we know that he's not.
He's actually quite insane.
Yeah.
But it was Crane's fault. Her prediction is that it was Crane's fault, and her suspicion is correct.
She's going because she doesn't think that Crane's behind it. She thinks that Falcone is not the least bit insane, and to get out of being in prison, Crane is doing him a favor and putting him up at Arkham instead, where he'll be more comfortable.
And in typical heel fashion,
that he's actually.
In typical heel fashion, he gives away his whole plot.
He should have just.
Who does this?
Should have just held his breath, gassed her in the elevator.
Yeah,
called
like,
it a day.
Why does he
and
just?
Instead, he's like, "This is where we make the medicine,
and we're going to put it into the supply." Yeah. And
I would say that the reason that she follows him down to the basement is because maybe she thinks that he's going to be basically expressed to her without saying it that I'm an unwilling participant in this whole thing. Here is a clue to, you know, like, unravel the mystery and get me out of it.
I think she should have known before. When he pressed down, like, another floor, getting in an elevator.
He had to use the key to go to the basement.
Get out. Just get out of that. That's a shitty situation to be in. But. So, you know, the SWAT team are there to back up the situation after, you know, Crane gets his ass whooped and tells Batman that he's working for Ra's al Ghul.
Now, why do I have right here that Batman destroys everyone?
Oh, no.
Because at one point, he fucks everybody
up. Because that's right after he gasses her, and that's when he says the line that you said, you know, I give her a concentrated dose, the mind can only take so much. That's when Batman shows up. And I actually read that. It would have been cool because you hear the henchman in the back, and the one guy's like, is it true that he can fly? And then the guy's like, I heard he can disappear. It would have been funny if one guy was like, he's not even real. And another henchman goes, he's totally real. My kid got a periscope thing from him last night.
Look, I can use it right now.
Here it is right now. Oh, there he is.
There he is.
Like, fuck.
That would have been
the last time I give anything away. That's the last time I knuckle sandwiches.
So he gets her to the Batmobile, is able to revive her.
He gasses Crane.
You're skipping the part.
Yeah, because he gasses Crane too in the process.
Yeah, he gasses Crane, and that's where you find out that Ra's al Ghul is back. Then the cops show up, and Gordon goes in alone.
Doesn't he use bats?
Yeah, exactly.
I didn't even think to mention that because it's so unrealistic.
First of all, before that is the best because that's when he ziplines down and grabs Gordon and ziplines back up before anyone can do anything. Then he does the thing. So are these bats coming from the bat cave and they heard it?
He uses his bat sonar.
Yeah, how the hell is he controlling thousands and thousands of bats?
I don't know.
They don't even try to explain that, right?
He just has bat sonar. Bats are known to go by sonar, so that's the best way to explain it.
And that makes sense, but
I would have liked for them to have mentioned something about it.
I don't know.
It's just it's the third inconsistency of major proportion in this
third
movie.
Then Gordon says, "Would you take my car," which would make way more sense because you could get away without cops chasing you. Batman says, "Never mind, I brought mine," and immediately drives over a cop car, killing two police officers, squishing them. Just a mess. But then the cops in this sequence are so fucking stupid, and it's the comedy relief. The one cop, "Can you at least tell me what it looks like?" And he goes by. Never mind. Oh, you're funny. And then he goes off. He's not on a street. He's flying on the rooftop.
Stupid.
That's for the description. He's like, it's a black tank.
Well, no, and that's fine. That's actually the cop that is.
But hold on. This is what I have for this scene. I go. They escape with the Batmobile. He's roof jumping, damaging millions of dollars worth of property.
0%
people's vents, people's chimneys, and then
the entire roof of that church.
And then who is that guy?
Yeah.
And then I wrote potentially kills many cops through crashes and bombs.
Yeah.
And these are people's dads doing their job.
Yeah.
Just doing their job, and he's literally blowing up their cars and making them flip into the walls.
Well, I make it a point that when he's on the roof of the parking garage, the cops have him. And they do a very shitty job of containing him.
I'll say it was completely ridiculous, not believable.
And then
killing
the
many cops in the process, in my opinion, damaging millions of dollars worth of property.
Okay.
Then on the way
Alfred
into the Batcave,
Alfred says it's a miracle nobody was killed, and that's when he says to him,
what the press is telling you.
It can't be personal, or you're a vigilante. I thought this was the one reason why I said I would support you is because you said this was not about thrill seeking. And he points at the TV and says, "What was that?" It's a lucky nothing.
Before that happened,
he loses the cops by turning off the lights.
Yeah, well, and also I have to mention that when he does the just hold on.
Yeah.
Rachel! So stupid.
Nothing calms somebody down like screaming their name and hitting an afterburner.
All right, Adam, go ahead. What do you got?
Of the chase scene, I find most extended chase scenes in movies boring, including this one. and I also wonder,
right?
It's just like...
I like having the two ends of the spectrum.
Let's get to the next plot. Development.
I mean, you really expect there to be this tumbler and no chase scene in a Warner
Bros. Not window? On a roof.
No, I.
Yeah, the roof shit was stupid.
Yeah,
that's where I'm.
There are certain.
It's meant to jump short distance.
If I'm deeply in
face, and that's what it did.
Whatever. If that was kind of rude. For extended chase.
I can't work under these conditions.
For extended fight / chase scenes, I have to be deeply invested in the characters, and there needs to be. I don't know, like some measure of doubt as to what the outcome will be. In this one, you know, he's going to get away, whatever. And then what is stealth mode pertaining to the Batmobile?
Turning off the lights and slowing down.
I'm gonna guess that's it, because isn't the Batmobile supposed to be stealth mode all the time?
In the they're street lights. They're street lamps, right? So you can still
see
it.
There's a chopper with a light on him. The whole point of the chopper is to keep the light on. Slowing down isn't supposed to, like,
let's
I guess we'll fly away now. Better luck next time. Give me a fucking... There are cops immediately to his side. That part make no sense at all.
Agreed. Just to keep you guys in the loop with me, I have nothing up until Wayne Manor burning down.
Well, I mean... There is more to Gordon legacy
in this time. Gordon finds out that the
Wayne's guests out there.
Hold on, Gordon does find out that the water supply is fucked.
Well, yeah, they've been doing this for weeks. Apparently, it wasn't just that day.
Rachel wakes up with Batman in the Batcave. He gives her an antidote for Gordon for her and Gordon, or for Gordon. She already gave her the antidote.
Right.
He gives her another two. One
more
for
drugs
Gordon
to knock her out. Seriously drugged.
Well, that's
she got the drugs. She got the
antidote.
Is there any film in this bra?
Yeah, like
you're not a photojournalist, but you're keeping any film in your bra.
I always check all my female guests for film in their bra.
She doesn't wake up groggy at all. She wakes up. She immediately sees the antidote.
She wakes up like she's late for a date.
Yeah.
Wow, I was only meant to light out for 20 minutes, and 6 hours later.
Yeah, and then she wakes up.
And he's like,
I knew you were just drugged, but I'm going to drug you again, and you're going to wake up in your own bed, and you won't think of anything.
I'm going to give you some real important information, but then I'm going to dope you up some more.
So then Ra's al Ghul.
He's so untrustworthy. Women don't like to be drugged.
So then we go.
Batman, public service announcement. Women don't like to be drugged.
Yeah, Batman.
So correct me if I'm wrong this time, Mike, but now we're at the scene where we discussed earlier where. Oh, I'd like to introduce you to this man, Bruce. What did you say your name was again? Ra's al Ghul.
Tell me if I'm saying this right. Mr. Ra's al Ghul.
No, we're not to this point yet.
Well, we just about are, because they start singing Happy Birthday before he rounds the corner, so they were either singing it all night until he got there, or... Something.
There's a Bruce Wayne's guest out there.
In this time, Gordon and Lucius Fox find out how Scarecrow is planning on pulling off his shit. And Gordon does go to Arkham with Crane trying to stop it.
Right.
So we did miss those
scenes. Yeah, so Bruce Wayne tells fucking Lucius.
And then he goes and meets Ra's al Ghul.
To mass produce the serum to fix you. After the fear gas.
So Bruce fakes drunk.
Because he just wants to do whatever he can to get them out, whether it means...
You know what? I should let you finish. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Whether it means letting everyone think he's a scumbag drunk, and because that guy even makes the comment, the apple's fallen so far from the tree. You know, he's willing to let that happen if it means getting these people to safety.
Well, this is the big Shyamalan twist, the big reveal that apparently went right over Adam Henning's head, where you find out that Ra's al Ghul is not, in fact, even Asian at all.
He's Qui-Gon Jinn.
He's Qui-Gon Jinn.
In effect.
And so that's when he says, I watched him die.
Well, once again, gives away his entire plan.
Now, when you go to get your name changed, because he's clearly the white guy, he's clearly like Fred Smith,
yeah.
And you go to, and you show up at, you know, like the Morris County clerk.
I don't think he goes and gets like official documentation and stuff. I think when he moved to
Ra's al Ghul isn't a name; it's like a title. It means like,
yeah, like
the demon's head or something like that.
It's a way of life.
So it's not like, it's not, you know, people shouldn't use his first name as Raz or something like that. You know, that's like in episode 4 in Star Wars where he calls him Darth.
Wait, is there any relation between the Joker or the, I'm sorry, the Scarecrow Venom and the water?
Yes.
Bomb.
It's the same shit.
Okay.
It is.
Yeah, it's going to send the city into
The blue flower concentrate is put into the water supply. Yeah, did you not watch? Okay,
did you fall asleep?
Let's just go over this real quick. The blue flower concentrate is put in the stuff that makes people really crazy, like the LSD, is put into the water supply over the last couple of months by Ra's al Ghul's pawn, Crane, who thinks that they're doing it so that they can hold the city for ransom. When in reality, they're doing it because they're the League of Shadows. Crane has no concept of this. So then
he's a pawn.
They continue feeding this into the water supply because they have the microwave emitter. The reason why they have the microwave emitter is to blast this into steam effect. That's why you see all that steam.
Oh yeah, to disperse the chemical.
To answer your question, yes. It's
okay.
The same thing. And then it's just in liquid form. Yeah. And
I remember now.
So insane,
thank you.
So the insanes are all let free. He says, oh, you burned my house and left me for dead.
No, he didn't. He saved your life and then brought you someplace where you'll heal.
Yeah,
what
exactly.
What are you fucking talking about?
And so he says, now we're even. Again, that's why I said this is the first of, the second of three or four major hypocrisies that just show why they're inconsistent over on the League of Shadows side, which gives credence to Batman's plight.
And then fucking he fighting. And
well, he
fire.
Burns Wayne Manor.
Right, but before that, Liam Neeson has the sword, and Batman stops it with his side and fucking blocks, and that's when the beam falls on him. So they're going down to the Batcave now, when Alfred fucking saves him, and Alfred sees that he's bleeding and he's all beat up, and they never make any mention of like, I had to give you a large number of stitches because you took a sword wound to your side, and now you're going to fight crime. Like, you're not hurt at all.
They kind of make reference right there to how he needs to toughen up a little bit because the log. He's like,
oh, you got a sword in your side? You know what, buddy?
Well, what is the point of all that?
Why don't you toughen up a little bit, you Nancy boy?
Well, he does say to him, what's the point of all them push-ups if you can't even move a bloody log?
Well, right. No, but what I'm saying is after that, when he's moved the bloody log.
Like, he couldn't even help him, like, spot him?
Well, no.
To the best of his ability.
Alfred's like 80. But, no, I mean, after that, he's clearly bleeding from the sword wound. And they don't make any mention of him getting sewn up or being in pain or, like, moving as though he's been hurt earlier
in the
evening.
And then you have that last, by the way, so maybe I'm jumping ahead a beat or two here, but you have that last SWAT truck.
After the whole Wayne Manor's burning
down. I'm sorry, regarding Wayne Manor burning down, would a fire burning for under 10 minutes crumble a concrete and brick structure?
Probably not.
No. Not
fair enough.
We are now shown, not just via the panoramic view, but also directly now, that the Narrows are a completely separate slum of the city because they have to be accessed by these series of bridges.
Bridges that they can raise and lower at a whim.
We also didn't mention that during this whole thing when he burned down Wayne Manor, messed up his party. He also, he was responsible for the blown doors at Arkham.
Oh, yeah.
That also happened in
No, the insanes are all let free.
Yep.
Though the worst of the worst are all let free. Meaning when we say the insanes, meaning the people that were turned insane or quote-unquote insane.
And they're raising the bridges of the city.
And these are violent criminals.
To keep them on the island, that is
But
the Narrows.
At the same time, what they're doing is successful at the beginning when they get all the SWAT out there to round up the crazies in the initial wave. You find that they did round up a lot of them.
Did we pass the part where she crosses the bridge? By telling where the cop says you can't cross, and she says, I'm a district attorney, and he goes, oh, okay, without showing anything that says you're a district attorney.
Yeah, so anyone?
You're a brunette that says you're a government employee, it's good enough for me. I'm a police officer, go for it.
What are you doing, sir? I'm the mayor.
I'm the mayor's son. Oh.
All right,
now,
go ahead.
And now we enter
I'm
into,
the mayor.
I'm the mayor.
And now we enter,
Your Honor, I'm sorry, sir.
We're into now what is clearly the ending of the movie or the beginning.
Yeah, they're turning on the weapon.
They turn on the weapon, so now the clock is ticking. I don't know where it is in my notes, but just for some reason the point of the kid going up to the cops that are really Ra's al Ghul's guys and he shoves them in the face. I think that's so pro wrestling right there. I don't know. Shout out to pro wrestling right there, but that was so.
And cool. Scarecrow during this whole scene is like running rampant around the city. Go ahead.
Just regarding the Scarecrow, he's especially on the money right here. I think it's a very frightening idea of escaped mental patients hallucinating on a small island in the presence of all these innocent people.
Yeah.
She holds the kid close and she's like whispers to him. She's like, "There's no reason to be afraid." And Scarecrow comes in on a horse from a mile and a half away. And he's like, "Yes, there is."
Yeah, like
eating fire.
I bet you he'd be like that, Mike.
What?
Him on the horse, like the Headless Horseman.
Yeah, no, it definitely reminded me of the Headless Horseman.
Fire made sense because but the thing, fear gas.
Yeah, no, but it's funny that that she's like even without the Scarecrow, there is something to be afraid
of.
There's a lot of things to be afraid of right now.
As we see when Zaz fucking corners them later.
And then Batman makes the save. Oh, Joey tasers Crane right in the face.
Right in the face.
And Batman saves Rachel and the kid.
And then she's
ready to.
And then she gives away right away.
The best part is
right away on Batman.
All of those people with that cop's gun, and that cop would have been blamed for it. She could have wiped her prints off, and it would have been like, well, it was this cop's gun.
Even worse, though, even though Flash could have killed those kids there if it wasn't for Gordon taking him down. And then you have them, after the rescue, they have them at the top of the building, and she asks, all she has to do is ask, and bang, she gets what she wants.
He tells him that he's Bruce Wayne.
It's not what I am on the inside, it's what I do.
That defines me.
All he had to do was say, I'm Batman, and then leave.
Yeah.
And we've been fine.
Now we're into the train pursuit.
Yeah, there's chaos in the city. Batman is chasing down Qui-Gon Jinn.
Qui-Gon Jinn / Ra's al Ghul is
Gordon's driving the Batmobile
and
out of control. So you have Qui-Gon on the subway train with this weapon that as the subway train is going, it's just blowing like the water main everywhere up around it because the subway train
just
is moving.
Just been like,
Ra's al Ghul thinks that he's trying to stop the train, which he's not. He throws the thing at the gear, keeps it in gear, while Gordon shoots out the supports, which takes him a couple attempts. But
Hold on, because Batman and Gordon were in hot pursuit, and then you have the whole Qui-Gon versus Batman fight in the train. Then Gordon starts shooting from the Batmobile to shoot out the bridge.
And he says, you finally haven't learn to do what is necessary, and
he's not trying to shoot out the bridges out of town. By the way, people, he's trying to shoot out the bridge of the subway train so that the subway train will stop.
It's like the support strut.
Yeah. So the microwave emitter is on its way from train stop to train stop to the head of Wayne Tower, where the headquarters will blow up everything and everyone will go into panic.
But the thing is, real quick, you said Batman wasn't trying to stop the train because you sent Gordon. That's actually not the case. He is trying to stop the train. Gordon was the failsafe. Gordon was the last line. Because he tries to stop the train, and that's when Qui-Gon fucking stabs the controls, so he couldn't.
Okay, once he realized that Qui-Gon was... Why do we keep saying Qui-Gon? Oh, my God. But once he realized
Qui-Gon
that... Jin. Once
Jin.
He realized that Ra's al Ghul was on the train, he puts it in gear, he says, you know what, we're gonna go with the failsafe, we're just going straight to plan B.
No.
And
Ra's al Ghul fucking stabs the controls, so he can't stop it.
Yeah. But that's a point. They had two plans.
That's
what I'm saying. Gordon was the failsafe.
And I think what's awesome here is the line that he says to him, you know, I don't have to kill you, but I don't have to save you. So now we see that he is willing.
There is a moral.
Yeah. Well, no, there is.
There is a gray area that Batman's willing to operate.
Exactly.
So he ejects from the plane.
We get to the crescendo of what I think.
Or from the train.
We get to the crescendo of what I feel is the crescendo of this film, which is where we realize that Batman, although he is not 1989 cut and dry black and white Hulk Hogan Batman, he is willing to do what is necessary, but he's able to do it on his terms.
When you say Hulk Hogan cut and dry Batman. Batman 89, Michael Keaton is certainly not any sort of saint based on the genocide at the
You may be
factory.
Talking Adam Westy Batman.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that it plays into the choices he has to make, you know, like with, I hate to say, the Dark Knight, when he has the train of one people and Rachel on the other side. But anyway.
He ejects from this subway train after Commissioner Gordon does blow out the supports.
The strut, so they know that the microwave emitter is not going to make it to Wayne
Tower. And Qui-Gon Jinn goes down with the train.
Okay, so a couple things. What's so important about getting the microwave emitter to Wayne Tower specifically?
Because if Wayne Tower is the central hub
of all the water mains.
Water and the train stop all go to Wayne Tower, so it's like a central hub.
So it's an extremely poorly planned city.
It really is.
Horribly. Fuck like weird psychopath attacks, terrorist attacks.
And you see on a little computer
display.
They have
that one building, the whole city is like, destroyed. No water or electricity.
And
that makes sense.
And you see on the graphics, like there's like 11 little like X, green X's, and then one or two big green X's like right around Wayne Tower, where every other stop has like just one little X.
Okay, and then secondly, once again, it's probably because I know the eventual outcome. I know that Batman wins. But again, I found the train fight scene to be laborious and sort of boring.
Cut to the board meeting where Fox is now in. Earl is now out. Earl walks in. Didn't you get the memo?
Because business. Because that's how business works.
You know, basically.
Oh, by the way, you were fired and nobody told you. And now that you already fired, now has your job.
Hey, guys.
This guy.
Instead of firing this guy like how you're supposed to do it with business, let's not tell him and wait till Bruce gets here so Bruce can walk in and be a wise ass.
He might
be able to sue us afterwards, but, you know, it'll be funny. We can put it on YouTube. It'll be so funny.
And I think it was great, though, because earlier in the movie, Earl acts like Bruce doesn't know shit about anything about business related. He's like, oh, yeah.
This is like the next day, right?
He's like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, this is like a little while later.
When the stock offering happens, then like, oh, how's the stock offering? Great. All you need to know is that our company is great. We're going to be good to go. Our company's future is secure. He's like, oh, yeah, who's buying? He's like, oh, various brokerages and institutions. Don't worry about it. And then he says to him, what's going on here? Oh, no, don't worry. I have a majority share of the company. How'd you do that? Oh, various brokerages and institutions. Stuff you don't really want to be worried about. Anyway, I just thought it was awesome.
Real quick, regarding the CEO. Poetic
justice.
While he was a jerk, did he actually do anything wrong business-wise besides firing Lucius?
No.
He made the company extremely profitable and made multimillionaires out of a stock offering.
Thought so. In regards to the house burning down, I don't
the rubble.
Like the fact that it burnt down to begin with. There was really no reason for it. Wayne Manor is historically significant, especially regarding the comics. You go through like all the history of all the generations of Waynes that were responsible for different things happening in Gotham and like...
Yeah, but don't you ever think that this is going to be like one of those things in the future? Like, I definitely have a problem with it burning down as fast as you saw it.
As quickly as it did.
Yes. I have no problem with it being on fire and then a few days later they're in the rubble. Okay, fine. But don't you look at this as like one of the things where maybe 100 years down the road when there's new Waynes and whatever, they'll be like, that fire of 05. You know what I'm saying? Great fire.
I see what you're saying. But I think I like that more if this fire had happened in like 1905. Before all that stuff, all this significant stuff happened in it. Because really, if they rebuild Wayne Manor now, it's not the place that all that he grew up. It's not the place where all this history happened.
It was just one wing.
Let's stop.
No. It was the whole fucking thing.
Really?
Yeah. There's nothing anywhere around. It sucks.
I thought it was a whole wing of the house.
I'll completely disagree because I believe that the foundation, especially the part of the southeast corner that they're going to improve upon, is what really matters.
Nothing's there, Joey.
No,
he means the foundation. When he says the foundation, he's talking about they're building the back.
The foundation is still
when
there. The part that now matters most.
Big deal. The Batcave.
He's saying all his family
Thomas
lineage.
Graham, gives a shit.
I would.
It's clear by the establishment of the characters that we've seen throughout this movie.
I get that you disagree, but whatever.
His father wouldn't care. The people that wouldn't care. In lieu of the greater good. And I think what matters most is that...
Don't you understand that they could have still made this movie where they only, like I thought, they maybe only burned down one wing of the house?
Yeah.
So that the rest of the house was still like the Wayne Manor.
And then you rebuild that one for the back end. We must have at least 1,000 or 2,000 listeners here in New Jersey.
Oh, easily.
You know,
1,000 or 2,000 in New Jersey alone.
For all you guys have ever been to Wildwood and seen and gone to Mariner's Landing on Maury's Piers and seen the hot spot, the original hot spot there at the corner. I mean, it burnt down in a great fire in 1984, the summer of 84 going into 85. And I'll tell you that my family, for a good 30 years, even after that place burnt down and was rebuilt.
Wasn't allowed back there because they started the fire.
No, we went there and treated it just as if it was a family tradition. It didn't matter that it had all new furniture and an all new kitchen.
I got that.
To upgrade.
They show these flashback scenes of young Bruce and his dad, where his dad is just sitting there silent.
With the stethoscope.
Well, the stethoscope, I think, is around Bruce's. Bruce is using the stethoscope, and he's putting it over his dad's heart, and they're just looking at each other like they're in love. Like, they just look like they have, like, this weird little bond.
Maybe they were dating.
And that's supported earlier in the movie when you have the dad not wanting to clue the mom in that his son's afraid of bats. It's almost like his dad and him have this weird little bond. It's like, what about the mom?
You know, I don't know. If you ever, heaven forbid, if you ever happen to have a son... Which I don't. Maybe
I would. I think you would hope to have.
I think. I'll remind you of this little.
On the Henning name.
I'd like to remind you of this little conversation.
We will be laughing. We will be talking. We won't be looking at each other, not saying a word, adoringly and
into
lovingly.
Each other's eyes. But
it's super awkward.
So we
awkward.
Get to the end of the movie, and Commissioner Gordon says we have a new problem, and reveals that he has evidence of the Joker card, and Joker's coming back.
Just perfect.
End of the movie, and we're going to... excuse me, wow.
An escalation. He says there's going to be escalation. We buy these weapons, they're going to get those weapons. And it speaks to the over-the-top Dark Knight and Dark Knight Returns. Oh, my God. Flying...
Dark Knight Rises.
Dark Knight Rises. Excuse me. Dark Knight Rises. I mean, flying... Good God. I mean,
so,
flying Batmobiles.
So the movie ends... like that on the cliffhanger of the Joker coming next movie, next installment, whatever you want to call it. But real quick, we are going to do our final review. Who wants to go first? Anybody?
I'll go first.
All right, Calvin Brody, your pal Cal.
Let me just, I'm going to adjust this here. I love this movie.
I love this movie.
It's terrific. It's my favorite of the three in the Nolanverse. I mean, much like Superman, I don't feel like we need another Batman origin movie, but I like how it went beyond that and showed his early days. Because, like, in Batman 89, you saw his parents die, and then he was Batman. And it's just, like I mentioned before, it's the same thing in the comics. His parents die, and he's like, I have to learn to become Batman. You know, in this, there's
Batman.
There's more grief, there's more emotion, you know. Again, I don't feel like Christian Bale could fool anybody, even with the mask, because his mouth looks weird when he talks.
It just looks like Christian Bale.
Yeah, Katie Holmes seems like she really tried, but her acting isn't that good. I like looking at her, but her acting is not that good.
Not that great.
Gary Oldman, I love Gary Oldman.
Yeah.
Wait. I would actually. I find Katie Holmes' acting to be okay, but
she
I don't
ain't
find
a
her.
Slut.
I don't find her much to look at.
No. See, well, the yang to my yin.
True dat.
What should we call it? I love that it sets
another
it,
Asian reference.
I have to. brought to you by Carl's Jr. It ends it so perfectly for a sequel. Like, just so perfect. And I enjoy that they didn't blow... Like Batman 89 was good, but I like that they didn't blow their wad right away with the Joker.
Yeah.
Because it makes you want to see the second one because you want to see the Joker. And
true.
I think they did a really great job.
And especially
on that.
With how scary they made the Scarecrow.
Yeah.
You're like, I'm ready for the
Joker.
Yeah,
you're like, what would real, like real, quote-unquote, real-world Joker look like?
And also, real quick, with the Scarecrow, he wasn't as primary a character as the Joker winds up being.
Right.
So you really build up that appetite to see him really face off against a nemesis.
Exactly. The microwave emitter, while a fun concept, I mean, if you think about the science for a second, just doesn't work. Overall, I gave it a 93. It's an A. I love it.
I'll go next. I nitpicked, you know, some stuff throughout the movie, but at the end of the day, my notes were actually surprisingly short, and that usually is indicative of me not having anything to nitpick or not, you know, it being engrossed with the movie. So it was entertaining enough for me to give it an 8 out of 10.
Awesome. I will go next. I'll keep it real short and sweet. I love watching the movie and I don't mind watching it going, oh, you know, this is a great Batman comic movie. And, you know, that's great. But when I do the After Midnight podcast, or I go and do the Midnight Jury and I'm actually reviewing movies and I do start picking stuff apart more, I find a lot more flaws. And when I didn't even notice and I had enough flaws, to bring it down to almost a very low A, high B. And then when we talked about the microwave emitter, and I didn't even think the fact, and shame on me, of the fact that it would make a human explode too. So, what's going on? I very much enjoy the movie, and I'll definitely watch it again. But it's not one of the – I don't think it deserves, in my opinion, an A. I gave it an 89%. It's a B+.
You missed the part where he used the bat microwave emitter repellent. It was,
It was on everybody.
On the DVD.
On everybody.
Well, it was aerosol. He put it into the water supply after he found out he put the other shit in the water. So it actually released that at the same time.
Joey Justice, your final review.
I mean, this is, to me, if you're looking at a movie that's, I think, in my opinion, top 10 of all time, I think this can make a very easy argument to be in there, not just scrapingly in there. It's cut and dry. This movie has a few inconsistencies, but nothing outside of the realm of what I would say Hollywood magic or movie magic would lead you to believe. I think every movie, if you're taking a test at school, a standardized test, all three of the Nolan Brother movies, in my opinion, all start out at hundreds, and they get points taken away based upon their inconsistencies, but more importantly,
maybe that's the flaw in your rating
for the over the topness. No, yeah, I find
every Christopher Nolan movie is perfect.
No.
You prove me wrong.
This series,
burden of evidence is on the state, fellas.
This series is great. I feel that this first one is the best of all.
Does this go with all movies, or is it just Christopher Nolan? It might not be a Christopher Nolan. He might just be all right, time to review. Elves. Well, it's 100.
I love movies.
No doubt it's 100. But we'll see if it's...
If it holds up.
I'm going to... I nitpick with the wrestling, and I'll give half gavels on wrestling. But on movies and on matches themselves, I'll give you straight gavels. And on an 8 out of 8,
I don't think you should constrict yourself like that.
No, I'll give you, because it makes me make a decision. And if I have to make a decision, and that's what Joey Justice is all about. If I have to make a decision, it's going to be 8 out of 8 gavels. This is a movie.
Oh my God.
This is a movie that you would pay to see multiple times in the theater. This is a movie that I personally paid multiple times to see in a movie. Whether I'm a corporate shill of Warner Brothers.
I did the same thing with Spice World. That doesn't mean anything.
Well, to those of us, like I said.
And Batman Forever.
Like we said earlier, to those of us less familiar with the other side of the tracks, Mike Norenganger, maybe it's because you yourself have been living in the cloud.
Well, how have I become a posh member of the Midnight Journey?
Well, I mean, just look at Studio A here, for example.
You're the one who dresses up in a 3-piece suit when we go do Rage Pro Wrestling.
You're a sack of shit.
Anyway.
Rubbing your wealth in our faces.
I think this movie.
I go home and eat tuna fish out of the can. Son of a bike.
Just because I have filet mignon cooking fresh in the kitchen. As soon as I get home, bam.
If you want to be entertained, if you want to see a compelling story, if you want to see effects that are, they're a little bit over the top, and the story's it's a little bit inconsistent.
Yeah, there's those problems. 8 out of 8.
Okay, but if you want to go see perfection in storyline that makes up for any other flaws, then you're gonna have to.
The storyline.
No, that's when you're gonna have
but
to.
But the storyline,
Casablanca. Okay, but
great movie.
Those movies get a 9 out of 8.
But if you want to see movies that are gonna give you well-roundedness and are going to be a little over the top in certain areas and a little
Helping. You're an 8 out of 8.
I know. I
everything you should be saying is you guys are wrong. It's perfect in every way.
I don't think that's
what an 8 out of 8 is.
No, I don't think an 8 out of 8 is
perfect. No, 8 out of 8 isn't perfect.
I don't think it's perfect.
That's what an 8 out of 8 is.
So would that be a 7.9?
So as you all know, on the Midnight Jury and on After Midnight, we all have different rating systems, and this just goes to prove it.
This is the most bizarre one.
This is the reason why I'll say, because if you're
wearing a perfect short.
Okay. Let me ask you a question.
Next, after midnight, we might do Josie and the Pussycats. That's 100. It is 100
targets to shoot, and I hit all 8 targets.
But not
perfect.
It's 100, but not that great of a movie.
I have an elite ranking system.
If I miss one or two, it's still an 8 out of 8.
I have an elite ranking system, and
very elite.
The reason it sounds stupid is because
we're supposed to end this. Yeah, you're supposed to end this. But this is gold.
You guys will start to see.
No, when you can listen back, you'll start to see.
If you guys
finally.
This is being recorded.
If you guys have any time to hear any of the Ring Justice that comes out, you'll see.
Yeah, they're going to want to hear that now.
I have a great... I have a rating system here, and the reason
of arbitrary numbers that mean nothing.
And the reason
because
why, and
100% and the means not perfect.
And the reason why I say that is because you have to achieve a certain level preliminarily to get on the Olympic team. You have to meet.
Okay, let me ask you something. All those things.
Can I say? If you guys had a top 10 of your
favorite, I love gymnastics. That girl took a few falls, but 10 out of 10.
That girl missed the water from diving, but she came out 10 out of 10.
For effort.
I think if you guys look at this, and you look at your,
Joe, there's no way here.
No, my question to you, Joey, is say there were some flaws, obviously, in your perfect movie. But what if you watched a movie that had none of those flaws? It was perfect top to bottom.
That's
what would you
said
give
it? Would
it?
Be 9 out of 8.
This is a 9 out of 8.
It's so good.
Look, what I'm saying to you guys is very simple.
It's very simple.
All right. There's a criteria you have to meet to being in the Olympics. To be in my top 10 movies of all time, you'd be an 8 out of an 8. 8 out of 8 gavels.
No matter what. So number 1 to 10, you're 8 out of 8.
No, what I'm saying is...
Christopher Nolan movie is already...
No, what I'm saying is...
That is.
Is it possible...
Not an 8 out of 8.
Is it possible for there to be... What you guys are saying is true, and what I'm saying is true. Is it possible for there to be more than one movie out there that I give an 8 out of 8 gavels?
You're right, everything we were saying
to?
Is true.
Hold on.
But you were
it,
not.
Is it true that...
But he was.
Because
true means false.
There's more than one movie... That's capable of getting an 8 out of an 8. And in fact, I would say...
Is there a better movie than Batman Begins?
Yes.
What, and you give it a 8 out of 8?
I would give it an 8 out of 8.
Okay, but like...
But Batman Begins gets an 8 out of 8.
But when I have...
Not
I have. I can name off the top of my head at least 20 movies that are 8 out of 8 gavels that I would then have to categorize as break down the top 1 through 10, which would be painstaking, but then I would have to give you reasons for numbers 1 through 10. And one of the reasons that I'll give for
broad.
All 10 is that they're all 8 out of 8 gavels.
It's,
okay.
You need a more definitive scoring system. If
what we're going to do is...
If 20... No, hold on. Hold your horses here, Gonger.
Right. Okay, guys, you're right. If it was a wrestling event, I would give it a 7.5 out of 8 gavels, for cripe's sake.
No.
But because it's a movie...
No, because you're saying you have this 8 out of 8 system, and then you have at least 30 movies... Or no, we'll say at least 10 movies, or 20 movies,
well,
10 of which are the 10 best movies ever created, that are all 8 out of 8, but these 10 are better 8 out of 8 than the other 8 out of 8.
No, I can see, no, wait,
absolutely.
Here's what I'm saying.
That seems so arbitrary.
I see where he's coming from in that aspect where I could say, I could
not
think...
Not that all of ours aren't arbitrary.
I could think of...
Exclusive to us.
Let's say I could think of... I could think of, let's say, 5 movies, whatever, that I think are all perfect in my opinion. But that's why I give them, I don't just go 8 out of 8. I give them the percentage, so I have all the percentage available, because they're all A's.
I'm Joey Justice.
But there's different levels of an A.
Correct. Here's how you get out of all of it. On a scale of 1 to 10, of 1 to 10, this is how I do it. How well was I entertained? I think what you're maybe trying to say, I'm not going to quote you, is that it was perfectly entertaining for you.
Absolutely.
For the movies that the critics would say maybe are better, that I think you're talking about, you find equally as entertaining as this.
Absolutely.
Okay.
I got something we got to do. Here's what we got to do. We have one more person.
Kiss each other.
With probably, I'm assuming, with his own rating system. And we've done this on the Midnight Jury, but now we're bringing it to the After Midnight podcast. We're going to go to the After Midnight correspondent out of Arizona, Handsome Dan Lopez. Dan, please take it away.
What is up, everybody? This is Handsome Dan Lopez, and I am here with my review, my official verdict on Batman Begins. And we're going to mention a couple of things real quick as we go through this. For the characters, I give the film a B. Reason being, there are some characters which knock it out of the ballpark, like Michael Caine, who is awesome as Alfred, and Gary Oldman, who is awesome as Jim Gordon. But then there's others like Christian Bale, whose Bruce Wayne isn't too bad, but his Batman leaves a lot to be desired. And then also Liam Neeson's Ra's al Ghul was kind of a waste of a character as well, in my opinion. I do have to mention Tom Wilkinson, who may be my favorite character in the whole movie, as Carmine Falcone. He does an amazing job. And then getting into the story, I give the film a C-. Reason being, the origin is just terrible. I give it a flat-out F. The rest of the story isn't so bad, particularly in the beginning when they're going through the background. They tell the Bruce Wayne story very effectively, but the film really starts to fizzle out shortly after that. As far as the Batman mythos is concerned, with his gadgets, I thought a lot of those were cool. I think it's cool that Batman can fly, so I gave it an A- for that. But as regard to the Batmobile, I know a lot of people don't like the Batmobile in this movie, but personally, I think it's awesome, and I give it an A+. Reason being, I felt like they didn't effectively communicate the fear of Batman throughout the movie, and the whole movie's supposed to be about fear. And the one time that you really see the public sort of being intimidated by Batman is when he's driving through Gotham City in that massive tank. And just all the different aspects of it, the way that it can cloak itself, all those things were just awesome in my opinion. He was driving on rooftops, really badass. So for the Batman mythos, I give it an A-. So taking all those things together, averaging them out, I give the movie an overall score of 82%, which would give it a B- in my opinion. It's definitely rewatchable, especially for some of the performances, because it's a Batman movie that is not terrible. It got us away from the campiness of the Tim Burton, Joel Schumacher, even way back to the 70s TV show. And that was definitely appreciated because I grew up on a serious, dark, sort of imposing version of Batman, and that's what I really wanted to see when this movie came out, and I believe that's what we got. But there were still a lot of things that could have been improved. But overall, it's not a bad film. It's not a bad Batman movie if you can get past some of those things. And I think it's entertaining enough in order to do that. So my final verdict is a B- for Batman Begins. This has been Handsome Dan Lopez, and the jury is
And from Arizona, back to Philadelphia. We are back here at WLW
Ridiculous.
Studios, Studio
oh
A.
God.
We have some people who disagree and some people who agree with Dan.
This is an uptown, Bronx-bound, 4 local train. Here at the bottom of the subway, fucking Handsome Dan Lopez.
No, well, we're going to have to definitely... It sounded... thank you, Dan. I do appreciate your weighing in on it. And also, next time... No, we will have to... It sounded much better once he had gotten the music... in the background.
Once the music faded out, it was
anyway,
hard to hear him in the beginning.
He graded the. What did he grade the characters? It was a B, somewhere in the B.
I think so.
I can agree with that.
We just listened to it and we're like,
No, I know.
There were several different grades.
Yeah, there were several different grades.
He had
grades.
C minus, A plus,
all I heard
and
was
A
the fucking
the
C
story,
minus.
The story for the C minus. I know he gave that the C minus. Overall grade, he gave it an 82%, which was actually pretty close to my 89. I think I was the closest to him.
I think I was. I gave an 8.
Oh, okay. So that's 80 about would be cut down.
It's all over the place.
Forget the letter grades, but yes, 8 out of 10.
But anyway, so, what do you guys have to say to Mr. Lopez?
I have one thing.
Dan, you have to take it like we give it to each other, like we just gave it to Joey.
Which, by the way, is ridiculous.
No, it's
because
not.
A 7 out of 8 and a 7.5 out of 8 are not A's. So an A and an A+ is an 8. So shush.
You don't even have to go with the letter grades.
We're on a 100 scale. Shit with this.
I'm willing to transition to that.
Really good points, but what were you going to say?
I think we should all transfer just to the grading system of movies.
I refuse to assign a letter grade to the numbers, but I am willing to transfer to one number system.
We need to figure something out.
What I
want
to address is I think that, first of all, I think he's spot on with the Batmobile. Yes,
I think that this storyline, it's a movie, for God's sake. I mean, it's not there to be this like mathematical number that has that works out perfectly every time. That doesn't need to happen. You know, it doesn't need to make sense.
The only thing that I honestly, the only thing I took offense to, because me and him were pretty close on what we agreed to disagree at certain points, but the one thing that kind of caught my ear, I was like, oh, I gotta fucking say that to Dan. Yeah, yeah. And I think you, Cal, you said it too, but the campiness of the Burton movies. I wouldn't call those campy. I mean, when you get Batman and Robin,
a little bit more campy.
Batman and Robin, yeah, campy. Fucking Adam West, campy.
Yeah,
but like, I wouldn't necessarily say that Batman was campy.
Batman Returns, when he had the circus folk, there's a little bit campy.
Well, even Batman 89, that they're with the Joker dancing around, there's a little bit more campiness and cheese than in these movies.
No, yes, right. There's more campiness than these movies, but I wouldn't say they're campy movies.
No, they actually set the original dark tone for Batman.
I think it is. I will agree there with him. I think it is campy in the original movies. I think that, like, other than Jack Nicholson in the first movie even is campy. I mean, he's the only
I just wouldn't consider them campy movies. Is all I'm saying. Exactly. They were campier
just
than
because there's campiness
these ones.
In it doesn't mean it's a campy
exactly.
movie.
Exactly.
The last thing I'll say regarding Dan Lopez, I don't agree with his assessment of the cloaking Batmobile. I thought that was
all he did
dumb
was turn
hell.
The fucking lights
wow,
off and slow down.
Yeah, that sounded like almost like a bark.
It was like my voice cracked. I was so intent on getting that point out.
Wow. So anyway, can we wrap it up here from WWE
yep,
Studios?
Definitely.
All right. This is Mike Norenganger.
This is Batman Beginning.
This is your pal, Cal.
Joey Justice Mandela.
And you can find us, of course, at facebook.com/AfterMidnightPodcast. And, of course, join us on our weekly show, The Midnight Jury. That's at facebook.com/MidnightJury. And both shows, ladies and gentlemen, are productions and produced by WLW Studios right now out of Philadelphia. And both are broadcast on the Shining Wizards Network at ShiningWizardsNetwork.com, available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Audio Boom, and on Geek Life Radio. That's The Midnight Jury is available on Geek Life Radio Fridays at 5-4 Central to start your weekend. We brought you back to that first decade of this new millennium. It's time to send you back to 2014. And while we're sending you back, we won't see you till 2015. So I hope you had a great Thanksgiving. I hope you have an even better Christmas and an even better New Year. Anybody else for those things?
No, fuck everything.
All right, I was only saying that because it said I had to say that right here.
I'm so proud of you guys. It's come all the way
proud of you
over
guys.
The last 14 years.
It's like he's been drinking.
No, I mean, it's
like, guys,
it's,
I love you guys.
Eight
out of eight doesn't mean perfect.
I just want to let you guys know that it's been 14 years now since the original concept of WLW. You guys have kept the studios alive. You kept the great, great original programming. Tremendous content coming. The Midnight Jury. Now, After Midnight Podcast. It couldn't get any bigger and better. I can't wait to see what's next.
Me neither.
Have a Merry Christmas, everyone. Thanks,
Merry
Joey.
Christmas. Yes.
Merry Christmas, everyone.
Thanks.
And we'll see you on the Midnight Jury Christmas special.
Talk to you then. 3 months back.